I'm going to call to order a regular meeting for the Grove Beach City Council, Monday, January 4th, 2016. Would you all please stand and rise with us for a moment of silence for the brave men and women in our armed forces who sacrifice every day so we can have our freedoms and liberties? Thank you. Please remain standing and follow for the flag salute. Mayor Pro Tem Lee, would you lead us?
Yes, place your hand over your heart and begin. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please be seated. Donna, when you're ready, roll call.
Here.
Thank you, Donna. Let's see. We have no closed session announcements tonight, so we are going to move on to agenda review. This is where the council reviews the order of the agenda as presented by staff and decide if we want to make any changes. Do any members of the council want to change the order of the agenda tonight? Okay.
I'll make a motion that we proceed with the agenda as published.
Very good.
Second.
There's a motion. There's a second. If there's no discussion on the motion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. So we are going to follow the agenda as published. I believe there are extra copies on the table at the back of the room. So let's move forward on our ceremonial calendar tonight. And the first one is the Awards of Excellence, recognizing the 2015 Employees of the Year. City Manager Peralt.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, and it's indeed a pleasure to be able to take the opportunity to recognize a couple of the city's employees. Annually, the city recognizes two employees. The first classification or the first award is called the Most Valuable Employee, and the second is the Overall Outstanding Employee. So what I'd like to do is provide you with the criteria, introduce the recipients for this year, and then ask the recipients to come forward for a formal recognition by the council. Begin with, we'll recognize the most valuable employee for 2015, and in terms of the criteria, it's someone who has gone above and beyond the requirements of their job on a particular project or task this past year, and someone who has taken a creative approach in solving a problem or in serving the public, fellow employees, or other agencies that resulted in benefits to the city, improved efficiencies and increased operational effectiveness, or increased customer service and or satisfaction. This year, the nominees for this award included Matt Goodman, Fred Mendez, and Lynn Pearson. And the winner of this award was someone that was also nominated, is Sergeant Sonny Gerber. Now, a little bit about the background with Sonny and this particular award. Sonny, as you know, has been with the city a number of years. He's graduated up through the ranks and was just recently promoted to sergeant. Now, the creative and ambitious task that he undertook this year was actually coordinating a large-scale active shooter training exercise for the police department, surrounding agencies, and the school system. For some of you, you may have known that this actually took place over at Grover Elementary, and it was really fascinating to watch. Given the current state of affairs, and you just never know when you're going to encounter an active shooter situation, and the ability to coordinate that event not only for our department as well as surrounding departments in the school district was deemed suitably worthy of the recognition. So I'd like to introduce for you to you Sergeant Sonny Gerber, who's our most valuable employee of the year. Sonny.
Thank you.
like to make a few comments?
I'm truly honored. I appreciate the support from the city and from my police department that I work for and my fellow officers. During the time of the active shooter, planning it out, we had a lot of stuff going on, so it was quite stressful at home, but I'm truly honored with this award. Thank you.
Now for the overall Outstanding Employee of the Year for 2015, and the Outstanding Employee of the Year is someone who consistently demonstrates an attitude of teamwork, service, leadership, integrity, or initiative. This year, the employees nominated to receive this award included Matt Goodman, Juan Leon, Nora O'Donnell, and Lynn Pearson. This was a very competitive group to make this award to. Each one of them is very well deserving of an outstanding employee award. The individual that we selected for this award is someone that regardless of the department or the request, she's kind of a can-do, will-do kind of person. She's been with the city for a number of years as well. Many of you are aware that she started with the fire department, came over here to City Hall, and has just worked a variety of different jobs and tasks. She's been extremely valuable. Currently, she's the administrative analyst for the Public Works Department. She is always there making sure that department moves forward, and she's a real key member of our team. So it's a real pleasure to be able to introduce to you Lynn Pearson, our overall Outstanding Employee for 2015.
Come on.
Smile.
And thank you so much for honoring me with the award.
And just congratulations from the council, I mean, on a job well done and an award well deserved. I think you both have been longtime employees with the city. And I'm going to take a little step further with Lynn to just say that anyone who knows Lynn is, if you give her an assignment, it gets done. I mean, she is definitely all about action. So, very congratulations. Okay, so let's move on to public communications. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council for a period of 3 minutes. On total, any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. Please understand the council will listen to your communications, but we cannot take action on any item that is not on the agenda tonight. And so I also want you to know that I say 3 minutes, but we'll take a look and see how many are commenting, and I'll give you some leeway on that. So this is for any item that is not on the agenda. I do have one speaker request form from Malia Quirk. So, Malia, you want to come forward?
Hello. My name is Malia Quirk, and we live on Margarita Avenue in Grover Beach for about 10 years. One of the main reasons we purchased our home was because we love the beautiful forest along El Camino Real known as Meadow Creek. To begin with, Grover Beach has very limited amounts of green space and charm, unlike our neighboring cities. When you drive down 4th Street, I am in awe of the beauty of the trees. It's one of the reasons we wanted to live here. To see this beauty not being preserved is a huge detriment to the city. I have picked up everything from syringes to sleeping bags, trying to preserve this forest. It infuriates me that nothing is being done to cherish this vast area of beauty within the city of Grover Beach, and that the homeless population is growing very, very fast. Aside from that, we have beehives, owls, monarch butterflies that inhabit and flourish in these beautiful trees. When I hear that hammering and cutting of wood to make shelter and are most confident that small barbecues are being used, I can't help but worry that one of the few beautiful forests in Grover Beach has the potential to catch on fire or be overrun with garbage, not to mention the safety concerns due to the homeless residing in there. We, along with many other Margarita Charles Avenue residents, have called the police department several times about this issue. Please listen to these critical concerns and help preserve this important Grover Beach Central Coast treasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Malaya. Don't have any more speaker requests, but I'm sure folks want to speak. So please come forward and just state your name, and you can turn into blue slip afterwards. Is there anyone else that would like to address the council? No, it says on any topic in the city. Not on the agenda. So any item not on the agenda. And when we get to those items on the agenda, I'll give you time to speak then.
Hi, my name is Sharon Biddle. I live at 900 Charles Street in Grover Beach at the intersection of Charles, Margarita, and 6. So I see just about everything going on. My windows face that intersection. Luckily, I have a big dog who sits at that window all day long, and she gives everybody her opinion. So I haven't personally been bothered, but it's amazing the amount of humanity you've seen walking through there that doesn't live there. In particular, I notice, because I use 4th Street all the time to get onto the 101 freeway, in the last 6 months to a year, I am stunned every time I go to the freeway that as you enter the area near the Motel 6, the number of people walking up 4th Street pushing shopping carts with all their worldly goods in it, backpacks. It's a huge parade of people. There used to be an occasional person who obviously was homeless and down on their luck, and my heart went out to them, and I didn't pay that much attention. But lately, it's like a parade of people with everything they own on their back. But they're obviously not hiking up 4th Street to go anywhere at the top of the hill. They're diverting into the nearby woods. And until recently, when I became aware of a report that Debbie Peterson wrote, who actually had the nerve to go down in there and see for herself with a number of other concerned citizens what was going on, that there is a virtual city down there of hundreds of people, prostitutes with actual tents put up with signs, a picture of a naked woman on the front, like advertising their wares. I mean, it's like Mad Max of Thunderdrome down there. The neighbors who were strong enough, brave enough to go hiking down in there, brought back pictures of every kind of refuse, and it's a tent city. And they said they personally witnessed a number of drug deals going down. It's obvious to me that the situation has become dramatically worse in the last year. And the word is out that it's the place to go. And it's really scaring me. And if I didn't have that dog barking at the window, I'm sure I may have had intruders by this time, because I'm at the intersection and there's a path that weaves around through all those neighborhoods, and you can exit it right at that intersection of Charles Street and Margarita. and a lot of people used to enjoy it as a neighborhood hiking path. Now we're all scared to death to go down in there. So many of us feel like we are prisoners in our own homes, afraid to walk in our own neighborhood. And I really would like to see the brain trusts here in this room put together. I know the homeless situation is very difficult. You move them from here and they go over there. But I myself, until recently, until a group of neighbors and Deb went down there to see for themselves, had no idea of the scope of it and the danger of it. Not just a few people down on their luck sleeping. I mean, it's a business enterprise. They're running a drug cartel down there, and it's scary. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Biddle. Was there anyone else? Please come forward. And if I could ask, if you could, instead of clapping, just raise your hands if you support the comments of the speaker so we can keep moving.
My name is Brad Snook. I'm co-chair of our county's chapter of the Surf Rider Foundation. On the day that Debbie Peterson helped to kind of coagulate the group that did the tour through the area there of Meadow Creek, I joined the group, and like the others, I was shocked to find out, because I work on 4th Street, so I make the track from El Camino Real up 4th every day. And so I see some of the people that have earlier been referenced here, and I wonder what they do when they disappear into those trees. And now I know. And I also wonder about the effects on the watershed, and some of the last open space here in the city that is essentially, not anymore, but we would hope that it could remain in a natural state because it has been set aside. And, you know, what's going to happen year after year is that stuff gets trampled or eventually gets burned or people are afraid to go in there, that it'll become either unusable or it'll become a detriment to downstream areas of the watershed. So as the co-chair of the Surf Rider Foundation chapter here in the county, I want to point out that there are two river mouse, creek mouse, in the county that are permanently posted for no swimming, in Avila with the San Luis Creek and at the mouth of Pismo Creek was recently posted that they don't want people swimming in there at all, anytime, and the county says, we're just giving up. Just don't go there. That's just unacceptable. I mean, I thought with the Clean Water Act and, you know, some of the actions taken after the 1970s that we had moved on. And so now we have an obvious problem with detrimental effects affecting us right now and possibly permanent effects into the future that with council action, they can be addressed. So I urge the council to hear the people and move forward on something to help Meadow Creek in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Snook. Very good. Is there someone else that would like to come forward? Okay. Yes, you please. Please come forward.
Members and Mayor, my name is Martin DeLeon, and I live at 941 Charles Street in Gover Beach. My family and I purchased the home over a little year ago, and I also considered buying the home for the beauty of the where I sit and where my neighbors also can see the beauty of the green space that's allowed to the city of Gover Beach. I just moved here 2 years ago, and we transferred, and we want this to make it our permanent residence. I would hate to have to sell because of the problem that's ongoing. In fact, the neighbors, Laurie and John, can attest to the fact that one day they were a homeless person was in the bottom of my storage shed, And I noticed them. I gave chase. And they were bold enough to jump over their fence while they were out there with their children and run right past them. Literally, am I right, Ronnie?
Yes.
They could have trampled over their small children. So they're not afraid anymore. They are doing what they need to do. And we understand. We're not heartless people. We just want... I'm doing everything like my neighbors to improve the property of the value of my property. I don't want it to go down. I don't want the situation to progress. All I'm asking is that we need to do something in order to relocate them or move them or find them somewhere where they could be at peace like we want to be as well. And I'm urging the city council to do something soon. Otherwise, it's a matter of not when, but how it's going to happen. There will be a fire, pending the cold weather that's coming up. And I've noticed fires in there, smoke, and it's getting worse. So thank you.
Thank you for those comments. I thought I saw someone else over here. And Donna, are you capturing the folks? I don't know if we need to have those who spoke to fill out just a real short blue form for our records. That'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll do that.
No, but go ahead and speak.
Yeah, my name's Paul Holden. We live at 1191 Margarita Avenue. That's real close to 12th. And I'd like to reiterate, I feel the transient population is going to cause or pose a public safety issue. About 3 months ago, I accidentally left my garage door open, and we had a knock on our door, fortunately, late at night. It was a police officer who had just seen someone enter our garage and kind of tampering with the bike that I had suspended. He had detained him. He was familiar with the individual transient in the area. I was just thank my lucky stars that the police department was going by at that time, or else we would have been missing a bike and who knows what else. I also know of a neighbor just up the hill on 12th had a very expensive bike stolen. So I think it will get worse before it gets better, in that they are going to get more bold in their actions. Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Mr. Mayor, council people, Mike Lewis, 1051 Margarita Avenue. I'm a new resident there, and I echo what I've heard so far, but I think the problem is bigger than that because I see transients, especially down on, I'm not sure that it's Dolliver or Highway 1, and on Grand Avenue. And I think it's a serious problem that needs to be addressed citywide, not just in our area. And I would appreciate whatever efforts we can take to remedy that as a problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Please come forward if you... Yes.
Mayor and members of the City Council, I wanted to just sum up a little bit because I was contacted about 3 weeks ago by one of the members or one of my former neighbors. I used to live at 1051 Margarita, and I wanted to just kind of consolidate some of the things that we saw there and some of the things that were said to us. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to walk down in those woods, but those coastal oaks are some of the most beautiful trees I've seen. They're ancient. And if they burn, I don't know that they'll come back because they've already been traumatized by the building there when our homes were all built. And I certainly lost all of the ones in my yard, and I think it was just the traffic of the builders and people living there. Just to let you know that I've had three people in the neighborhood tell me they're going to be getting guns. I've heard of two bikes or have already gotten guns because they're worried. And I've had reports of three different bikes being stolen, cars being stolen, three different families having bikes stolen. And I know that in three of those cases, they actually went into the woods and recovered their property. The car was found in a homeless encampment. The bikes have been found in the homeless encampments. And then also a wallet and a jacket were recovered. But that's dangerous, and I don't think that we should be having to resort to doing that. But apparently, what I've also heard is that the police are hard to get on board with this because they don't want to go into the woods, and because there are arguments about whose jurisdiction it is. Is it Pismo? Is it State Parks? Is it Grover? And so they're having to resort to getting guns and going in and doing their own thing there. One of the suggestions that was made was that we take that Meadow Creek Trail, it's part of the general plan, and we formalize it like the boardwalk and like the Bob Jones Trail. They don't have nearly the same level of problems there, and my understanding is that there have been a lot of volunteers, and so it would be helpful for folks to know who they could talk with if they'd like to go in and help create the trail or clean it up. And we've also heard that there are some major cleanups going on, and so I know that would help the people a great deal to know what cleanups are being done and when, particularly this one. I think it would put people's mind at ease. And then finally, you've all done a great job working with the businesses. You've taken a lot of action that I think has helped, and I think that if we could clear out the 200 or so folks who are living in the green belt between Oak Park and west of 4th Street, if we could clear that out, I think that would go a long way towards solving some of the business issues as well. And then finally, I did leave some photos, large photos, over on the dais there, so that if folks wanted to see them, they could be projected. Thank you.
Thank you. Did I see another hand? Or okay. All right. Well, seeing no one come forward at this time, I'm going to close public communications. There's two things I would like. I see Chief Peters is in the back. And Chief, can you maybe just, there was a comment about police not getting on board and some concerns. Maybe you can clarify.
Certainly. The particular area that's being discussed right now is in an area where there's state parks territory, City of Grover Beach territory, as well as Pismo Beach. In reference to jurisdictional boundaries, obviously people take reports, the departments will take the reports in their specific areas. The Grover Beach Police Department, for what I can say, is that we've been down there several times. As a matter of fact, Public Works Department has cleared an area that we can get through the Nacimiento Road gate and drive our trucks right into the area. So we've been able to drive down there as of last week, and instead of just parking on 4th Street and walking in, now we can get all the way in there in case we have to transport people out. It's a lot safer for the officers. So police department-wise, we've been down there quite a few times, and I can attest that several of these crimes that have occurred on the Margarita area have been solved by the officers doing investigations that lead to some of that population that's occupying down there. There has been some enforcement action down there as well, and currently we are putting together a program with State Parks and Pismo Beach to see how we can come up with a solution for clearing out that entire area. As you know, we're also working on the area south of the train station, which was scheduled for tomorrow to be cleared out, although the rain and the inclement weather has prevented that. So that'll be moved to January 20th. So that particular area will be resolved in January 20th. And then this area in the North 4th Street area, we'll still be addressing it up until then, but that'll become the primary focus after January 20th as well.
Okay, thank you, Chief. And so first let me say to everyone who has come forward and spoken, we really appreciate you coming and sharing this information. It's not that it's something that we have not been aware of. I think Mr. Lewis said it best, is we were trying to look at this and do it in a comprehensive manner. So what I really would like the city manager to do, and we share this with the business folks, so I want everyone to understand that there have been things that have been set in motion. And so, Bob, can you kind of tell everyone what we've done and then what's being planned?
Well, actively, the city has been dealing with this issue for the better part of a year. And that goes beyond the encampments. The city has legislated a couple of actions, including an ordinance that was focused on curbing the inability of or the curbing the homeless control of their dogs that we were having an issue with. That was probably the first thing that we could do that was fairly easy. Probably the most long-lasting and most impactful was the legislation that was passed in February and implemented by the city in March, and that was really a limitation on the panhandling. It was a new panhandling ordinance that prohibited aggressive panhandling throughout the city, and actually restricted panhandling to certain locations because we were having difficulties, and eliminated panhandling in front of businesses in areas that have access, et cetera, to shopping centers. We've limited the ability to panhandle in those locations. The other things that we've done, we're in the process of installing cameras up and down Grand Avenue. We had a series of cameras that were first installed at Ramona Park. We've since installed cameras at the west end of Grand Avenue, and we're proceeding with installation of cameras that are tied directly to dispatch all the way up the Grand Avenue corridor till 10th Street. So those are in the process of being implemented now. We talked about the encampments. As you know, the encampments are not easy to eliminate. It takes a lot of effort by multi-agencies. We've used that approach with the elimination of the encampment south of the depot, and as the chief has indicated, we'll complete that process later this month. Once that process is completed, as the chief indicated, we'll begin with the focusing our attention on the encampment of this particular area. Chief has already reached out to different partners, including state parks, as he's noted, in the city of Pismo Beach, because it's going to have to be a multi-jurisdictional effort, and that will probably take place later this spring.
Okay, so let me just clarify. So, and I know everyone's here want to know how does this affect me, and I think we were talking about the overall approach, but the takeaways is, the homeless encampment is south of the depot. We have started a process that is multi-jurisdictional. There has been coordination between the city, homeless service providers, state parks, and other partners. I understand the sheriff is assisting us. So we were going to start that this week, and apparently because of the inclement weather, that's been now pushed back.
Until the 20th. The reason for that is primarily, if you take a look at the extended forecast, it shows rain both this week and next week. The issue isn't so much removing the campers as much as getting the folks in to clean up and actually fence the property. We will be fencing that particular property, and we do need a few days of clear weather to be able to complete that process.
Okay, and we are starting then the process to remove those that are along Meadow Creek and Margarita. Is we have already started that process, and obviously we can't just fence the entire area. It's a little more challenging, correct?
That will be challenging, and it will it's obviously somewhat resource dependent. It's going to be a little bit more complicated than south of the depot because it's a larger area. It's covered by multi-jurisdictions. And the ability to fence that off is probably too costly and too formidable to accomplish. But what we will do is go in and use the same procedure in terms of working with the homeless services groups to initially go through the area. We will, I believe we've already done some of that work. We'll then follow that up with the posting of the property and then the citation and the removal of individuals through sweeps that will be done after we've given the individuals there that proper warning that they're going to have to leave the encampment. There's also an issue, as you know, it's not just the residual trash that needs to be removed. That's part of it. but we also have to be very respectful of everyone's rights in terms of private property and the ability to store private property for individuals that were in the process of relocating.
Okay. So if we are able to complete the process on the area south of the depot, let's say this month, we would begin in February. I want folks to give them a time frame of some of the actions we're taking.
We'll start the process in February. I just will indicate that we'll take some time before we'll be able to complete it.
Okay. And Chief Peters, can you come back, please? And if anyone else on the council has any questions, please feel free to weigh in.
Yes.
So obviously knowing it's going to take us some time to get to that point, is there any, what advice would you give to the folks who live in that area and people in the community? Because we agree with everything that's been said here tonight. It is a concern, and we are trying to figure out the best way to eradicate this and obviously still be have that somewhat compassion for the folks who are there. But we understand that you deserve to be safe in your homes and in this city. So it's something we've said, and it's something we are trying to follow through on. So, Chief?
Well, the first thing I would say is that I would say in any neighborhood is don't leave your valuables in cars. Lock your vehicles. Also secure your homes properly. Make sure your garages are closed, your windows are closed. If you run to the store, lock up your home. That way there, when you come back, everything is still there. If you do see suspicious activity, please call the police department right away. Let us know what you see, where it's going. If they're walking to a neighbor's yard or into a neighbor's yard, let us know where that's at. We'll get officers out there right away and definitely investigate that. So helping us by being proactive with eyes and ears, if you hear stuff, don't hesitate to give us a call. We will walk down there, and our officers have been down there in the middle of the night for yelling and arguing that's been going on and have gone down there and you know, broken up fights and so forth. So we're not afraid to get out there in the middle of the night. Let us go down there and do the dirty work for them. Just give us a call so we can hear or see something.
Thank you, Chief. Mayor Pro Tem.
A follow-up question on that, Chief. Can you let people know that is part of your patrol, normal patrol route, I would imagine, through that area, and so that the police vehicles that go through are constantly aware of what's happening? Can you kind of give a little information on that as well?
Yes, actually, that area around Margarita Avenue, Nacimiento Road, and so forth, that has been put on some extra patrols lately. Because of some of the activity that's been up there. So I'm sure that several people have seen the police cars out there. They will be shining spotlights. They will be getting out, walking foot patrols and stuff like that. So, you know, be cognizant of the officers that are out there. And again, if you see anything suspicious, give us a call. We'll definitely come up.
Okay. Councilmember Wright.
So, Chief, thank you very much for that information. But when you say are called to that area and you or your officers go down there and break up a fight or whatever it is that you do, what generally happens to the folks that are been involved in an altercation or whatever? Are they removed from that area? Or
well, it depends on each call for service. I mean, if it's a misdemeanor fight and there's no complaining party or no victims, then there's technically no prosecutable crime. If it's a felony involving where there's an aggravated battery and serious injury has been, felt by somebody, then we can make an arrest without a victim's cooperation at that point. And oftentimes that does happen. A lot of the times we tell them to move along, get out of the area, and find another place to go. Obviously, if we leave and go to the next call for service, it probably doesn't take them very long to just double back and be right back there. So.
I don't
know. Councilmember Shaw?
Is this area considered a public park? Because I know you're not allowed to be in a public park after dark. Or is this just open space?
It is not actually a city park.
That's
so
right.
It's not considered a city public park. It is open space. It's part of the estuary area and the state parks area. And the city boundary just flows into that area.
Okay. And a couple of things I just wanted to bring up that were brought up to me at our meeting on the transient population before, and I see many different faces. These things seem very obvious, but people brought them up to me, and I just want to share things that can be really helpful are adding lights to your house, getting a very low-cost security camera on your house. Also calling the police. I know a lot of times I feel like I might be bothering them, but they need to know what's going on, and I sometimes will call the non-emergency number if I see something and I just want them to know. So please call. Also, I don't know if it would be helpful, but if the city attorney could tell everybody why we can't legally just, because I always thought we could just go in and clear it, but legally we would be facing a huge lawsuit if we did that. So if maybe he could explain that.
Are you okay? Yes.
Thank you. The case law and prior experience in various other cities basically considers all the property that these people have with them as personal property, and it's no different than evicting a tenant in a rental agreement. You're obligated to protect their property for 90 days and store it and charge them for the cost of storing. Charging them for the cost of storing here is not going to recover you any money, but one of the cities was sued and successfully had to pay a judgment of over $2.5 million for clearing out an area of homeless encampments and not properly protecting the property, the valuables that these people own. There are now methods in place, and Chief and I attended actually some of the classes at the league that where you basically store, catalog, identify, and protect that property for a period of time that's necessary under the law, and then you can get rid of it. But it's many cities are dealing with these issues. This is not a simple matter. If it was a simple matter, cities with a lot of money would have resolved it a long time ago. It's an issue that is a balance of constitutional rights of personal property and personal association with rights of homeowners and people who live in the area of feeling safe and being protected and feeling like they can go home and be comfortable about it. So I know we're working on the issue. We're addressing it from all angles that is possible and working with other jurisdictions to do so.
Very good.
Thank you.
Anyone else? No? Yep. You have someone else?
I had one more question for the chief. What resources are available for either developing a neighborhood watch that your department can do if residents of that area wanted to organize in that fashion?
Well, if residents in that area want to organize a neighborhood watch, they can contact the police department and speak with Commander Tim Miller. Actually, Commander Angela Lamone will handle that. Tim Miller's moved to the other administrative side now. So Angela Lamone will handle any neighborhood watch. We can host a meeting out there, show you how neighborhood watch works, what the purposes are, and then give you the tools necessary to help us help you. So.
Okay. And have one more logistical question, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's more for the city manager and perhaps for Mr. Snook. As we do clear out of the area, obviously the city may not have the resources to do all of that work. Is it possible to organize whether it be under the auspices of a creek cleanup or some level of area-wide cleanup that volunteers can participate in? I don't know if that's something obviously would need to be done after the first initial round, but just something to consider if there's.
Yeah. So like I said, this is all brought to us under public communications, and I want to thank everyone for their comments and the information we've given. And we had a meeting with the business owners, and we focused, and I'm feeling like we definitely need to have a meeting with the residents and the neighborhood, and so. We want to work through the city manager and the chief to see if we can't get that set up, because I don't know if there's an association out there. But in addition to calling the chief for their suspicious behavior, I just want to make sure everyone understands that we represent you, and to never be hesitant to give myself or any council member or anyone at City Hall a call. I'm glad you're here tonight. And I know that when we had the meeting with the businesses, and we said we're going to try and do these kind of meetings quarterly, so I think it's time to maybe broaden it a little bit. But certainly, so we'll have to talk about having a meeting, a time, a location, and then we can really get into a lot of the details as a, you know, I wanted people to understand that we're not just knee-jerk reactions. This is something that we've been working on. But I know there's a lot of questions out there, and so I think what we'll do is follow up and have a meeting and make sure you let all of your neighbors and everyone else know that we'll be meeting, we'll be answering questions, and we'll even be looking for suggestions like we did with the businesses. So I think at this point we've got other items on the agenda tonight. I want to, again, thank everyone for taking time out of your busy schedules to come down here tonight, but certainly do not hesitate to give us a call, especially if there's something on your mind. We want to be able to make sure we're representing your interests. Okay? Very good. So let me give people a chance to clear the room if they're leaving, and then we'll move on with the rest of the business tonight. Honest love. Well, excellent. We still have a lot of folks here tonight, so that's good.
That Citizens Oversight Committee must be a popular item.
Yeah. We'll reshuffle on everyone. Get comfortable. What do you have, Martin? Okay. Okay. This one goes here. All right. We are now going to move into our public hearings for tonight. This is item number 2 on the agenda if you are following along. And this is the introduction and first reading of an ordinance amending the Grover Beach Municipal Code to ban commercial cultivation of cannabis. City Attorney Kazanowicz, you have the floor.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council members. Consistent with Council's direction, staff has prepared an amendment to the Municipal Code which would put into place prohibitions for cultivation of commercial marijuana, excluding from that any type of personal use and authorized caregiver use. We've gone through this, but just to summarize, obviously the state has, since 1970, passed various laws directed at medical marijuana. Most recently, 3 bills were passed, which will put into effect a regulatory pattern or scheme in state law, which will regulate dispensaries, cultivation, transportation, and delivery of medical marijuana. Cities have an opportunity to install local regulations in place as long as those regulations are in effect prior to March 1st, 2016. Consistent with your direction, a couple of court cases which allow the cities to exercise local control over marijuana issues, both regulate operations and cultivation. You're directed.
Oh, is your mic on?
The mic is on.
The mic is on. Mic's on?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's on. How about here?
There you go.
Okay, better? Thank you. Again, direction from the council was to prepare a prohibition ordinance for cultivation of commercial marijuana with exceptions for personal or caregiver legal cultivation. The draft ordinance is attached in the staff report. It basically prohibits commercial cultivation in all zones in the city. We also amended the existing dispensary ban to make it consistent with the new state law, updating the definitions and referencing, making sure that it's understood it's a land use regulation. Recommended action for the council tonight is open and conduct a public hearing after we answer any questions you may have. The chief is here as well. He participated in preparation of this report. Introduce the ordinance for first reading by title only, and then schedule second reading and adoption for the January 19th, 2016 council meeting, which will make the ordinance become effective prior to the March 1st date required by the state law. With that, I'll answer any questions you may have.
Great. Thank you, City Attorney. And I see some people with blue forms that are not quite sure where to hand them in. If you will hand them to the city manager over here, and then he can bring them up to me. Okay. So let's see if there's any questions for the city attorney. Councilmember Nichols, do you have any questions?
No.
Okay. Councilmember Shaw.
I just had one because the exception for personal use was really important to me for medical use, and I see in our the way the ordinance is drafted, it just says, let's see, it's section 3152, and it's the end of the second paragraph, and it says that as used herein, the term commercial cultivation of marijuana shall have the same meaning as set forth in Business and Professions Code, as the same may be amended from time to time. Then it says the term excludes cultivation for personal use by a qualified patient or licensed caregiver so long as such cultivation is within the legal parameters of state law. And I was wondering, could you just reiterate for me then what that legal parameter is at this time?
The parameters, the existing law provides for, I think, 6 mature plants or 12 immature plants that can be drawn, grown for personal use. The new laws provide for a canopy size, and I believe 400 square feet is the, or 100 square feet for per person, per personal user, and up to 500 square feet, I believe, for a qualified caregiver.
Don't, please help. Please keep it down. I'm going to open this to the public, and you'll have a chance to ask questions. You need to have some order. But okay, so we'll make sure that everyone
I'll get into
your mics, please.
I don't know. Today is probably volume is a little lower.
That's okay. That's okay. We just want to make sure we're orderly and that you get the information. I think you can respect the situation that we're in.
So that amount will still be permitted: 6 mature plants or 12. Immature plants, 100 square feet or up to 500 square feet at for medical use. Is that correct?
If the person is a qualified patient or a qualified caregiver.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Bright.
Thank you. Yes, if you wouldn't mind just clarifying the next paragraph, which is section 315(3) regarding the public nuisance. It goes on to say any use or condition caused or permitted to exist in violation of any provision of this chapter shall be and hereby is declared to be a public nuisance and may be abated by the city pursuant to Civil Code Procedure 731. Can I just expand on that a little bit?
Sure. Basically, this enables the city to proceed administratively and treat it as a civil wrong, and if necessary, prosecute as such in court. The criminal aspects of violating of this law have been preempted by state law. There's a recent case out of, I believe, Fresno County that... where the court basically invalidated criminal punishment provisions out of a local ordinance stating that the state law preempts that at this point in time. So most of all of the regulations in municipal codes are now being changed, that I'm aware of anyway, are being changed if they were prior treated as criminal convictions, misdemeanors, or infractions. They are now being changed to be declared as public nuisances and prosecuted administratively or civilly if necessary in court.
So then, for example, are you saying that if somebody had 8 mature plants or they had over 500 square feet, that could be considered a public nuisance?
That is correct.
And then that would be like on a complaint-driven basis? I mean, someone would
prosecution
have to,
of it, you mean? Or?
Well, yes. I mean, someone, like a neighbor or someone would
call?
It could be complaint. It could be discovered by officers during a call if it's on plain sight. There are various ways city becomes aware of a situation.
Okay.
But once that happens, we have an administrative citation process, which most likely would be used in these type of instances. It would not be a civil lawsuit. It would simply be a citation and an administrative process.
I get it. Thank you.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Actually, no questions at this time. We'll have some comments later and some for discussion.
Okay, very good. And I don't have comments at this point. I do want to allow everyone an opportunity to speak tonight. So I'm going to open this up to the public, and I'm going to call out a name. First name, please come forward. State your name. And city of residence for the record, and then I'm going to call the next person and just so that person is ready to go, okay? So first up is Tanner Stevens. And then Tanner will be followed by Jack Stevens.
My name is Tanner Stevens. I live in Pismo Beach City. First off, I just want to say that there's plenty of ways you can cultivate commercially. Not plenty, but you can have four or five cards in the same house and have the city's different. I mean, the personal recommendation for medicinal, you can have up to 100 plants prescribed to be able to grow. And if you have four people, five people living in the same house, you can still grow up to 400 or 500 plants commercially. It's not going to do much good to ban anything. Everything's still going to happen the way it happens. People are still going to continue to do what they do, and it's got to be regulated. It's the best and easiest way I see everything going forward, or a lot of people see going forward. It also allows to. I'm not used to public speaking here. But
take your time. You're fine.
But it also allows to promote cartels and black market, which is completely unregulated, and also big money corporations. If you're not allowed to grow, the small guy that are members of the city, you will have big money corporations coming in with big money, and that's exactly where the industry will go. And I think the best thing we can do is regulate and have it work for everybody.
Thank you, Tanner. Jack Stevens. Six is perfect. One for us and one for the city clerk.
Here, I got two.
Here, why don't you give this to the city clerk and I'll share with him.
Two. Whoops, now you've taken mine.
No, you're good. We're good.
It's fine. We're good.
Oh. Yeah, we're not the best at public speaking, but we sure are a passionate bunch. Anyway. Mayor Scholes, City Council, staff, appreciate the time to come up and talk. I guess the question is, what are the perceived fears or concerns you associate with commercial cannabis? Public health and safety is the number one challenge we hear from law enforcement and others who oppose commercial cannabis. Through the new regulations with AB 266, and Senate Bill 643 and AB 243, there are 13 agencies now involved to regulate the cultivators and the lab testing and the distribution of the products and the retail sales of the products. If you choose to ban, these agencies won't be there to legitimize unregulated cultivation and distribution, which is currently in place. These bills have created, well, it falls under the Department of Consumer Affairs, which I'm sure you all know, and the Medical Marijuana Regulation and Safety Act, which is MRSA, creates the Bureau of Medical Marijuana Regulation, which unfortunately comes out as an acronym as BUMMER. At any rate, here in California, we have the largest network of cannabis cultivators, distributors, and retailers in the world. We are second to none. Without regulation, the black market and its numerous cartels are continued to be supported. We're asking to create an ordinance with regulation. We are present here today to provide information as well as education to council, appropriate staff, and council members. We will continue to be available to you and your representatives to assist and ensure in our community with respect to cannabis policy and procedure. I'm a founding member of the California Growers Association and recent director of the Central Coast Growers Association. This March 1st deadline thing has put a lot of pressure on yourselves, for sure. It was a mistake. I'm sure you've all heard by now. It's been a mistake. Congressman Wood has written a letter. He said, calm down. There's no reason to, we're not going to take away, I mean, you have land use ordinances that are always going to be in your control anyway. In the meantime, this rush to knee-jerk reaction to ban doesn't serve any of us. We're small business people, and we want to pay taxes. We're begging to be regulated. The ones that aren't begging to be regulated are jumping up and down when you say you're going to ban. They want that ban. They don't want to pay taxes. They want to continue to use pesticides. They want to continue to do things poorly. We're not that people. We're extremely organic. We're health conscious. This is a medicinal thing for us. This isn't about adult use. It will be about adult use in 2 years from today, but it's not. Right now it's about medicinal. My time's up. At any rate, we'll let everybody else come up here and talk. The one thing I do want to get out first is the spirit of this legislation is to be in cooperation with local communities, to work with us to create a common framework to operate professional businesses which benefit the community and contribute to the betterment of all. Appreciate you not just knee-jerking to a ban. I mean, let's read what the bill is, see what benefits it is. The spirit is to work together, and the governor backed this. A bunch of people got together, this League of Cities. I know they're extremely conservative, and I can appreciate that. And we will, we're going to respect whatever decision you make, no question. It's your right, and I think an informed decision is probably a better decision. If it's uninformed, it's usually not a good one. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Okay. Thank you. Let's see. Is this Doug Kopcha? And then Doug will be followed by Cynthia Gonzalez.
Yes, good evening, Mayor and Council members. Thank you for your service. I'm fairly new to this. I essentially am an advocate for the movement, and I'm going to be somewhat serving as a liaison between the growers that are in San Luis Obispo County, some of the small businesses that they represent, and just want to maybe continue along the same message that Jack was trying to send in terms of let's be prudent about the decision. I'm here to basically be a resource to you in the future if you have any questions in terms of how I can educate you or provide information that will help you come up with a feasible plan or ordinance or regulation that's going to serve the community better. You know, these are small businesses located in your community. You know, they're tax-paying, they're law-abiding citizens. They adhere to the Compassionate Care Act in terms of all compliance. And, you know, they're leasing buildings here within your community. They're small, legitimate businesses. And they're serving patients, people within your community. You know, I'm not going to talk about, I guess, maybe an analogy might be to help you better understand. I mean, if there was a small craft brewery that was, you know, going to establish a business here in Grover Beach, And we all know, you know, we just talked, the police chief earlier had spoke about some of the issues that you're facing here within the community with regards to alcoholism and drug use. And, you know, I think a ban would create a situation where you're only going to be supporting the black market. And, you know, these are monies, these are small business, legitimate businesses that can provide within your community in a safe, effective manner. And, you know, I think if we were to ban cultivation of cannabis from a commercial standpoint, it would only create more problems. It would create more time that that your police force would have to invest in, you know, identifying when they could be focusing on other issues. They could be focusing on, you know, domestic violence associated with alcoholism. They could be focusing on methamphetamine use. They could be focusing on other drugs that haven't been legalized by virtue of the Compassionate Care Act. And so I just want to add in terms of, let's be prudent. Let's not take a knee-jerk reaction to this. Let's get all the information you can from the appropriate parties and the appropriate individuals, and make a decision that is, you know, right for the community and right for the people that, you know, represent your community. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Cynthia Gonzalez, followed by Charles. Is it Doster?
Doster.
Doster. Very good.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members, management team. Cynthia Gonzalez, I just escaped San Francisco about 6 days ago and am planning on purchasing a homestead here with the intention on providing our medical marijuana delivery services to the community. We've seen a vast need and we've seen a vast growth in the patients and the type of need that's truly indicative of this great area. When I say patients, we deal with cancer patients, fibromyalgia, Crohn's disease, chronic conditions that we've had great success and efficacy. One of the main concerns I had when I was reading the ban is that when in San Francisco, we relied on our brothers and sisters to the north to provide the type of medicines that met the criteria. It was safe. It was clean. We provided the testing procedures there so that we were assuring our patients that if something that I would give myself or my mother would be actually the same thing I would provide for their mothers, their wives, their family members who are in need of this type of medicine. When I look at the landscape around here, as I have in the last couple of days, all I see is obvious potential for growing some of the most positively enriching and strongest efficacy medicine in the region. My family, I have several family members that migrated here back in the early 1900s or 1925, so I have several family members that are farming, and they've been growing fabulous, you know, products. And unfortunately, none of them cannabis this time. So when I see the recent concern about banning cultivation, my concern is that we rely on the local cultivators. We are hand select the most. We're looking for certain variables that match the kind of conditions that we're working with. So when I see a ban like this, what it does for someone like myself who is in the medical delivery business, we legally cannot be transporting from San Francisco to our backyard here. That's considered illegal. So we have to rely on the local market. So when you begin to make those kind of considerations, I just ask the council and you, Mayor, that you consider all the variables. I mean, we're very much involved with the state of California. We have our permits. We're a very legal operation. But more importantly, we are also on the sounding board of the state of California, who is putting together the language, the legislative language that participates with this. We were very, very active in that whole movement, and we continue to do so. We would like to provide our services as well to the board and to the members and to the management team here in this market, as well as Pismo and Aurora Grande. This is our first meeting that we've attended for the year, and we plan to attend the others as well, so that we can share not only the knowledge-based information that we have, but also the importance of this medicine. Time and time again, we get folks that tell us that we are not trying to segue from Western medicine. We're providing a complementary medicine that's been very beneficial. To ban a cultivation is to ban those people from having that other choice that might help save a life or provide them with the quality of life that we know firsthand with our case studies and our efficacy structures that this has been very, very beneficial. We've been doing this for a little bit over 2 years now, and we just hope that there could be some consideration to perhaps maybe change the dynamics of this ban. I thank you for your time.
Thank you for those comments. You're going to ask her a question?
I just have just a very quick question. Yes.
Okay, so just one question.
You represented in your comments that you potentially were representing some folks. I wasn't sure if you were representing yourself this evening or someone, another organization.
I am. We have our own personal company. It's called Elite Care.
Okay, great.
And it used to be called Elite Care SF. Now we're going to change it to modify for the area here. Thank you.
Great, thanks for that clarification. Mr. Doster, followed by Angelo Catania.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to ask the Grover Beach City Council to reconsider the total ban on commercial marijuana. And don't go that far. And the reason why is most medical patients actually don't grow their own medical marijuana. Medical marijuana is used by Crohn's patients, cancer patients, rheumatoid arthritis patients, people with chronic pain, people with glaucoma. It has, and we're just beginning to discover the medical uses. People use it to relax. People who can't tolerate alcohol, like myself, I'm a diabetic. I have diabetic nerve pain, which I use medical marijuana for. And if you ban commercial cultivation, you really will be taking a segment of the industry out. You know, medical marijuana has been legal for 20 years. People have been doing this without any harm to anyone. And people have actually been cultivating marijuana in California a long time before that. I think, I know everyone's worried about the upcoming regulations. I don't think they ever intended to deny, it was not the legislative intent to deny local jurisdictions the ability to regulate themselves and to make land use ordinances and regulate medical marijuana. I think that it was simply a default measure to say, well, this is going to go into effect if local jurisdictions don't have something by then. And, of course, this is a legislative issue that is still being worked on. I see it more as a land use issue. You know, where is this use appropriate? Okay, and where would the community like to see it? And I'd like to ask you to consider it as the use that it truly is. It's in my mind, I would see it as a light industrial use. It's eventually going to become an ag use. The problem right now is probably growing it like broccoli, as people would steal it because it has a high value. But it's really an ag use, and it's really a light industrial to industrial. And I'd like you to consider, you know, designating an area of the city for its cultivation, and I think it would be a good thing for the community. An interesting thing that has happened in communities that have legalized marijuana is that there's been a 20% drop in opiate deaths. You know, in the 60s, there was a great scourge on this nation. The guys coming back from Vietnam brought back with them heroin habits, and Richard Nixon started the Federal Drug Act and the DEA. And unfortunately, he misclassified marijuana as a class one narcotic with no medical use and banned its research, its medical research. The reality is medical marijuana has been a medicinal medicine for over 10,000 years. They found it all over the world, in Egypt, in tombs. There was a guy, this Iceman was found in... recently, it was just about 10 years ago, I think, in Europe, and he had some marijuana in his little pouch along with his, you know, beef jerky or whatever it was he had, you know. Just like some cultures are used to milk, you know, and other cultures, like the Irish are used to whiskey, We evolved with the use of marijuana as a medicine. It is one of our oldest medical herbs, and should be. And unfortunately, it was also the largest cash crop in this country at one point in time. And I believe that the origins of its banning were based in racial discrimination. They were based in other types of prejudice and intolerances. And it's time that we become more enlightened. And the question is, how enlightened are we going to be, and what is going to be reasonable for your community? And it's up to you to decide, you know. But I think that a total ban on commercial marijuana goes too far. And I'd like you to consider designating appropriate zoning areas of the city for that purpose. You know, there's you know, the people in the marijuana industry, they're good people, you know, and it really. You know, if you've ever watched Reefer Madness, where the guy smokes a joint and kills his girlfriend, marijuana isn't like that. You know, it's it'd be much better if the kids at Cal Poly smoked joints instead of drank beer all night. You know, I think I've said enough, and that's what I'd like you to consider is simply finding an area where it's appropriate in the city. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Angelo Catania.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Angelo Catania. I run a facility in San Luis Obispo. We are going to be providing laboratory services and analytical services for the commercial agriculture sector. And one of the regions that we're going to be tapping into is the medical cannabis region. We are going to be utilizing the skills of an Ag 3 inspector biologist from Monterey County to help with zoning practices for commercial grows. We can actually have white papers drafted up similar to how you would propose a winery or any other type of commercial agricultural facility. And I would basically like to offer our services to the community and to you. We're here in support of all of the dispensaries and of the growers here and of the patients as well. This is a issue about regulation. I'm a longtime San Luis Obispo native. I'm third generation here. Catania has been a name that has been very deeply rooted in this area, so I do like to see the best thing happen for this community. I have a lot of family here. Regulation, standardization, getting on board with collecting those taxes instead of ticket money. You know, getting onto, you know, the good foot with the community and with, you know, the government agencies as well. You know, being that said, we have an opportunity here, you know, to really to change the face of the way that we've done things a long time here in the Central Coast and kind of evolve. And, you know, they've been toying around with the idea in Colorado of actually doing away with sales tax completely because of how much money they've made with the medical cannabis resources over there. So at that point in time, you have to think there's quite a huge potential for revenue as well as helping potential patients. I work with a company that does a high CBD generation, which is a component that helps with epileptic seizures and with brain tumors, cancer, and all types of other ailments such as multiple sclerosis. It's been proven to get, you know, children that have, you know, 60 to 70 seizures a day, violent seizures, down to 1 to 2 seizures a day. We're talking quality of life improving not only for the children but for the family around them, you know, and so it's really a communal thing. It takes a village, and we're here to make this happen correctly and within the, you know, the graces of your guys's good judgment as well, and so I ask that you guys do practice your best judgment on this, and we're here for you in a professional manner to help in any way you guys need. So thank you.
Great, thank you for those comments. I believe this is Dennis, is it Rizzo?
Good evening, Grover Beach. My name is Dennis Rizzo. I'm the producer of a production company. It's called Cannabis World Now, and you can check it out on YouTube. Basically, what we do is We have a film crew that goes all over Europe, shows like Spanibus, different fair trade shows all over Italy, over Spain. California, very prevalent. We filmed at the Emerald Cup a couple weeks ago. We worked the HempCon shows. We worked the Cannabis Cup shows that are presented by High Times as well. Never really had a bad incident at any one of these shows, and this is talking on the recreational level. That's fun. That's a party. However, let's get to the medical side, okay? There's a lot of people that get benefits from it. There's a lot of people that move from New Jersey to Colorado just because their children can't get the medicine they need. You know, right now I'm working with, we're working with a case right now, and it might go National Geographic, with a 12-year-old boy that's experiencing 200 seizures per month. This is in Sacramento. He has to wear a helmet, okay? Pretty bad. He gets wonderful, wonderful medical benefits, okay, from the CBD, which is not even psychoactive, okay? This comes from industrial hemp, okay? There's four different classifications of the plant. Are you familiar with them? There's ruderalis, there's sativa, there's indica, there's industrial hemp, okay? Now, Declaration of Independence, Constitution, was all written on industrial hemp. Non-psychoactive properties, but now they're finding out that there's CBD and good benefits. And now they got the CBD GN. We have to go back and remember that Dr. Raphael Meshulam in Israel in 1964 discovered the endocannabinoid system, which is right here. Now, are there any medical people in here that know this? Medical certified doctors and PhDs? Anybody like that? They can explain it to you. Now, cannabinoids are abundant on this planet. Okay? So, whoever put this whole deal together, it seems like if oxygen is good for the lungs, maybe cannabinoids will work in the endocannabinoid system. But who are we to judge that? And that's why I say we must have an open mind. Okay, I would like to all supply you with in the next week a book by Doug Fine, who I think is probably the number one researcher and writer here in North America and now being respected in Europe. Okay, it's called Too High to Fail. He also has four other books. Okay, anyways, my time is limited. Thank you kindly for listening to me. We're very busy doing tours and schedules. Check out Cannabis World Now. There's a big company coming out of Israel in 3 years. They're going to be here, Tikam Ulan. They're working with the FDA, Crohn's disease, active studies. I will have some books to you because I went on record and said it. You'll get my books as a compliment. Please keep yourselves educated. Thank you kindly.
Thank you for those comments. I didn't have any other speaker request forms. Is there someone that's holding one and was waiting to the end? Okay, seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close this to the public. I'm going to bring it back to the council. So let's have some discussion. Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
Thanks for that, and I appreciate everybody's comments and enthusiasm for this subject. The discussion that I had had a couple different things, and perhaps actually the speakers generated a question for me. In the ordinance, for the city attorney, what would the difference between medical marijuana and commercial cultivation be with regards to, and maybe the question is more commercial cultivation with regards to state law. How would that be differentiation between, for lack of a better term, the patient cultivation, individual cultivation?
Well, the ordinance does not ban individual or personal cultivation and basically refers back to state law with regard to controlling personal cultivation and qualified caregiver cultivation.
Okay, now I think I may be understanding. So this ordinance basically is allowing personal cultivation, but the intent is commercial cultivation in any land use within the city would be banned. So, but in a commercial zone, someone would not be able to grow in accordance with this ordinance.
In commercial cultivation of medical marijuana is
under this ordinance would be prohibited anywhere in the city.
Okay.
And again, exempted from that, pursuant to your direction, is any cultivation for personal use of qualified patients and caregivers.
Okay. Okay. So then the going back to the intent of why we're doing this evening is to, in my opinion, is mm-hmm. because there was a requirement by one of the laws, and I forget which one, with regards to having a cultivation ordinance in place prior to March 1st. And this was the most expedient way to do that without having to go through a planning commission and establishing new regulations. But this, none of the actions that we take tonight preclude us from doing something beyond that if we wanted to tackle the issue of medical marijuana, whether it be commercial cultivation, individual cultivation, or any other aspect of this industry. Is that?
That is absolutely correct, and I wish that some of the folks were here at the last meeting, because we covered that in great detail,
right,
and would have answered a lot of questions that were raised tonight.
Gotcha. Okay, great.
So I have been doing this for quite a while, and frankly, I don't trust the state when they say, yeah, well, the deadline is not going to be enforced. Right now, the deadline is the law, and my advice to you is that we comply with that deadline and put something in place that will provide you with a local control over the issue. And because we have only less than 30 days to do it in, any type of land use regulation, any type of consideration of which zones will be appropriate, how do we control it, what's the environmental review process, would take us way beyond that timeline. So for the time being, or forever if you wish, that's a decision that you make, a ban is not a CEQA project because it does not have a physical effect on the environment, and it allows us to move forward and meet the deadlines that were set forth by the state. And maybe the deadlines will be changed, but as we sit here right now, we don't know that, and again, my advice to you is not to count that's going to happen in a timely fashion. So you're correct, Mayor Pro Tem. Once this is in place and once the city has exercised its local control over the issue, the city retains the ability to come back on March 1st and start considering what the gentleman said, if that's the desire of the council. Okay, so what zone are we going to put it in? Or if we're going to allow it, what would be the provisions? How would we deal with it? What are the regulations, et cetera? That's going to be a six-month process because most likely environmental impact reports will be necessary and all of the other things that are pertain to those issues. Water usage, pesticide, air quality, all of those things will be triggered by considering any type of regulation of commercial cultivation. So that's why we advise you that if you wish to retain local control and not have state dictate how we deal with commercial cultivation in the city after March 1st, adopt this ordinance, and then if the council desires to look at other options with regard to cultivation, commercial or otherwise, or dispensaries, direct staff to bring it back, and we can initiate discussion, go through the planning commission, go to the coastal commission, which will take time, and go through the process of doing that if it is the direction from the council, desire from the council to look at those possibilities.
Okay. So I appreciate that clarification. One of my other comments I want to make in section 3 of the ordinance, there's a word where I as I read it, I had a negative connotation, so I don't know if we want to change that word or have a different approach to it. But it says, nothing in this ordinance shall be interpreted to mean that the city's permissive zoning scheme allows any other use not specified specifically listed herein. I'd rather see that, whether it be permissive zoning code or permissive zoning regulation, mm-hmm. so that we clarify the intent for the scheme. Towards that end, I'll make one comment, is that I'm willing to support this ordinance with some of those minor modifications, with the intent that whether it be this evening direction or at our second quarterly goal setting, when we have the discussion of priorities, that we work towards presenting or having staff come back with a more comprehensive look at whether it be cultivation, medical dispensaries, delivery systems, or and determining where in Grover Beach we can make this safe, make it profitable, make it a benefit to our residents and our neighbors.
Okay. Councilmember Bright, you have anything?
Well, briefly, I would be in agreement with Mayor Pro Tem Lee in that respect as well. We had kind of talked about this briefly at our last meeting. I'd like to get as many of our residents who care to involved so we can really hash this thing out. So I would certainly be interested in doing that.
Okay, Councilmember Nichols.
One issue that was brought forward is the personal use grower being the patient. I don't know if there's anything on the books that someone else can be the grower for a medical marijuana patient or not.
Yeah, law provides for qualified caregivers that can certainly cultivate for, I think, up to 5 patients, if I'm not mistaken.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Councilor Michelle.
Yeah, I thought at the last meeting we had pretty much decided that this was just a stopgap measure, and as soon as we could, which would be March, we would really, you know, take the time necessary to go through all the steps to hash this out. Because, the one thing I know about this is I just don't know enough, and I want to know more. And my main concern was just not, having anyone's daily life or what they're doing now turned upside down. And I'm thinking that will hopefully preserve the medical cultivators who are doing so now. And from there, I think we really just need to get more educated and go through whatever processes we need to go through. Part of me says, well, let's wait and see what our other cohorts here in our other small cities are doing, but part of me says, hey, maybe we can be the leaders. So it's up to the rest of the council. But I know I can't decide anything tonight, and I think all of us agree that this is simply a stopgap measure because it was the safest thing to do for now, but we need to know more.
Okay. So, yeah, I've closed public comment, unfortunately. So, so clearly the law that's gone into effect has presented us with a deadline that puts us in an urgent status. I mean, because the other option would have been to adopt an urgency ordinance, which is what the city of Rancho Cucamonga did. I have to say, I've been doing a lot of reading. I think I spent most of my weekend reading on this topic, and it is a very complex, and I'm not saying that in a negative way at all. It is a very complex, and I think I had said in the last meeting we wanted to not only on the medical side, but to look at this as a potentially down the road a growth industry rather than a sinister plot. And so I do agree with the city attorney. I don't necessarily trust the folks up in Sacramento. They are often always putting unfunded mandates on us. And so I think we do find ourselves in a situation where we have to adopt something prior to March 1st to preserve our local right. But I am also a big opponent of looking at regulation versus bans. But I do want to make sure I go on record to say that to protect our residential neighborhoods will be a priority. But I think I'm in line with everyone else. That if we move forward with this ordinance as proposed by staff tonight with minor amendments, that we give some direction that this comes back and then we have those very robust discussions. And quite honestly, I'm looking forward to getting my copy of the book, Too High to Fail. So someone else had recommended that book to me before tonight, just so you know. Anyway, so I think with that, let's see if someone's prepared to make a motion on this item, and then we can give some direction.
And actually, before I potentially make that motion, I have two minor housekeeping questions.
Okay.
And I apologize, I didn't bring them up earlier.
So before you do that, the city attorney, the mayor pro tem, brought up the question regarding, I think on section 3, where it says city's permissive zoning scheme. I know that's a legalese term. Is there
it's
any?
It's a planning term. It's not a legalese, but we can just remove the word scheme if that's the desire of the council as a whole.
Permissive zoning. Do you want to just leave it at that? Is that your suggestion?
That's fine with me.
Because I'm a recovering planner, and I've never seen that word. Sorry. Anyway.
So my other housekeeping item is at the bottom of page 1, the last whereas. It's the grammatical person in me. Second line of that paragraph where it says, which goes into effect on January 1st, can we say which went into effect? Like I said, it's the grammatical person.
You are.
Was effective.
Or what?
Where are you, Mayor Pro Tem?
The second line of the last whereas on page 1.
On page 1. Okay.
Yeah, page 1. Reads in full currently as Marijuana Regulation and Safety Act, MMRSA, which goes into effect on January 1st. If we could change that to went into effect or became effective or some language there.
Okay.
And then my only other question is on... is on page 2 under section 3152 under definitions. Do we need to put in a definition of cooperative, or does the fact that we say dispensary shall also include a cooperative suffice for this current document?
And so it maybe suffices. I can, it does suffice because you're making reference to the definitions that are in current.
Business and professional code. And
exactly.
Exactly.
And I read that all week. I read that too this weekend. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So with that, I will make a recommendation that we conduct the first reading by title only of the ordinance, set a second reading and adoption of at the next regularly scheduled council meeting of January 19th, 2015, with minor modifications as noted.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Okay, seeing none. Donna, roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes, and so we want to give some direction, or is we should, just so we're on the record.
Okay, so from that perspective, yeah, I'll be happy to provide direction, kind of summarize what the rest of the council kind of iterated as well as to direct staff at the second quarter update or earlier as possible to bring forward an ordinance or language for consideration for medical marijuana in commercial uses within the city. For dispensaries, for potentially commercial cultivation, and delivery systems, and then we'll prioritize that as part of the goals and objectives as to where how quickly that can come back to us.
Okay, I just want to. I think everything you said, except for second quarter, and in my mind, second quarter means after March 31st. That's part of the mid-year. Budget review, correct, Bob?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I understood the direction to be to return it at mid-year with a program that would review all of those tasks in a time frame as to how long it would take, and then the council would prioritize that work item along with everything else it needs to review.
And we anticipate that in February at some point, correct?
The mid-year should be, I'm targeting the first meeting in February.
Oh, okay. So then we can give some direction then, because I have researched some ordinances that are in place that have, and there's some good components and some other things that we could utilize, but I think there's folks who've offered themselves as resources, and that would be maybe a great opportunity.
And we have prepared cultivation ordinances for other jurisdictions, so I mean, there's plenty of resources to run.
Okay.
Just to be clear from our standpoint, the direction at this point in time is to simply bring you a staff report and an item for discussion with various possibilities. I think the item at some point in time should be directed to the Planning Commission for their consideration as well after it's shaped by the council.
Yes, that is a procedure matter, but I think we'll want to give very specific direction. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think we have a consensus with that direction, so we'll be looking forward to having that discussion the first meeting in February, which is, I believe, February 1st, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Very good. Again, I want to thank everyone for taking time out of their very busy schedules to come down here and to share the information with us. And I think you could see that this is a council that we are trying to look at this in a very open-minded fashion, but we definitely want to make sure our community is safe as well. So thank you all, and at this point, let's take a 10-minute break.
Are you okay?
Apparently not.
Yeah.
He's
killing me. Do you want me to get you?
Yes.
Has it been like this, like every day?
Yeah, pretty much since I had this weird test that he did.
We talked about it or not, and it doesn't matter.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
So you're going to get the surgery in January.
I'm still waiting for a date.
So that should hopefully.
Well, either it's going to take it out, or he's going to remove it.
If you come out of there, I'm not going to.
Donna stole my pretty pictures.
All right.
If I can get my camera crew ready.
I'm going to reconvene the Grover Beach City Council meeting on Monday, January 4th, 2016, and I believe when we ended, we had just concluded item number 2. So we're going to move to our consent agenda. No, right? 2. Important topics tonight.
Yes.
There always are. Consent agenda. This is basically routine items that we usually take as a group. They are typically non-controversial in nature. So there are 4 items on our consent agenda tonight. There is the Treasury report for the period of December 15th through December 30, 2015. There is the Treasury report for the streets bonds account, measure K14, and that's for the same time period. There is the minutes for the City Council meeting of November 16, 2015, and then there are the 2015-2 Street Rehabilitation and Repair Project Award of Construction Contract. Do any members of the council want to pull any items from consent?
I have questions on 15-2, so whether it warrants taking it completely off consent is... I mean, they're basically logistical questions with regards to schedule and timing and so forth. So if you want to take it off, I'm good with that.
Yeah, let's pull item 6.
Okay.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay, then I'll entertain a motion on item 3, 4, and 5.
I'll make a motion that we accept consent agenda items 3, 4, and 5 as presented.
Very good. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, there's a second. If there's no additional discussion on the motion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. So what we typically do is when we pull items from consent, we actually do put them on the end of the agenda. So I would like to, let's do that tonight. I think we should be able to go through item number 7 relatively quickly. And then item 8, I believe there's someone here as well. Okay. So then let's move on to item number 7. This is appointments to the Citizen Oversight Committee, Street Bonds, Measure K14. City Manager Peralt.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, it's indeed a pleasure to be able to present this item to you this evening. It is the appointment to the Citizens Oversight Committee as outlined in Measure K14. As the council will recall, Measure K14 was approved in November of 2014 by a significant margin. Measure K14 authorized the sale of up to $48 million in bonds over a series of years to rehabilitate our local streets. A part of that measure was actually the appointment of a Citizens Oversight Committee. The Oversight Committee is to take a look at bond expenditures, the expenditures of the funds that the bonds produce, to ensure that those expenditures are made as the voters had intended, and that is obviously for street rehabilitation. The council did constitute the oversight committee as consisting of three members. The terms are 4 years. The council authorized the city to proceed with the appointment process, actually, or the appointment application process, actually, back in May, I believe, of this particular year, of 2015. We have advertised since that date, and we have at this point received three applications. Those applications have been received from Ann Holden, Paula Tripp, and Cherry Wingate. It is those applications are attached for your review. Typically, the process in the past has been to interview the candidates, but since we have just the three, and with the mayor's direction, we scheduled the appointment for this evening. The council could simply appoint the three that have come forward. The council could, as an alternative, could choose to continue to solicit applications. But there is a time frame you need to adhere to, and that is that the first report actually has to, of this committee, has to be completed and submitted to the council right after the first of the year. So we're at that point. Be necessary to appoint the committee so we can complete that process. Anyway, staff is recommending that the council proceed with the appointments. I believe all three of the individuals are also present in the audience tonight.
Very good. Thank you, Bob. Any questions of staff? Not to my right, any to my left? Okay. And let's see, this is a business item. So at this point, I'm gonna just keep it here with the council. Let's make a decision, and then based on that, we can introduce the three individuals who are here tonight, Bob.
Yes, we can do that.
Okay, very good. So
after review of the applications, I'm in support of moving forward with these three folks. Looking at the information, they all seem to have a understanding of financial issues. One of them has lived in the city for 2 years, the other two for upwards of 18 and 20 years, so I'd be supportive of that.
I agree. They seem qualified and willing, and I think we should get them while we can.
I think we're all in agreement. I mean, I think these are actually three excellent candidates. I'm familiar with them, so okay. Let someone prepare to make a motion.
I'd be happy to. I'd make a motion that we appoint the three applicants, Ann Holden, Paula Tripp, and Terry Wingate, to serve on the Citizen Oversight Committee for Street Bonds, Measure K-14, for 4-year terms of office, and to adopt the resolution confirming the three appointments, and then we'll introduce them thereafter.
Okay, sounds good. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call, Donna.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
An enthusiastic yes. So the motion carries, and what I'd like to do is maybe just introduce Ann Holden, Paula, and Terry. Do you all want to come up and make a comment, or I'll leave that up to you. And I didn't see Paula behind Murray.
I'm looking forward to getting involved in my new city.
Well, thank you very much.
Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm Paula Tripp, and I've lived in Grover Beach for almost 18 years. It's hard to believe it's been that long. And I've been retired now for a few years, do private consulting work, and so I'm interested in trying to help the city the best I can. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. Good to see you, Paula.
Hi, I'm
Terry Wingate. Lived here actually a little over 20 years now. Apologize for not being able to do something more for the city previously, but I've been working out of town for a long time in Santa Barbara. And when you say there's a very immediate deadline.
This seems to happen a lot around here, huh?
Probably when we get a chance.
Well, thank you, thank too, Terry. We appreciate it. Very good. And, Bob, you guys will be giving them an orientation and everything, correct?
Right.
Very good. Thanks again. Just, you know, folks who volunteer to be on the committees and help improve our community, I mean, thank you is not enough, but we appreciate it. All right. Let's move on. Wow. Let's move on to our next item. This is item number 8, I believe. Yeah, this is item number 8. This is a Grover Tech Center request for a waiver of drainage standards. City Engineer, Public Works Director Greg Ray, you have the floor.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and City Council. Thank you very much. Let me start up a PowerPoint presentation here. Oh, here we go. Thank you. Sorry. I know Donna sets this up well, and I just wasn't seeing it. Thank you. Okay, there we go. And then it is. Perfect. All right. Thank you. So, thank you, Mayor, for introducing the item. This is a drainage standard discussion, or more specifically, it is an item regarding a request from the owner and developer of the Grover Tech Center for a waiver of city drainage standards as they apply to the project. I'm going to look over my shoulder just to be sure that we're seeing the same thing. Beautiful. Okay. So, on July 20th, staff presented a letter to council from Mr. Brad Ford that had requested a waiver of the city's 2006 drainage standards for continued development of the Grover Tech Center. And the Grover Tech Center is located on Front Street between Newport and Ramona Avenues, basically parallels the railroad tracks and is adjacent to the railroad right-of-way. The 2006 standard requires on-site retention of runoff from all new impervious surfaces at the time of building code issuance. So it's a building code related standard. Because this council adopted that standard, staff does not have the authority to amend or waive this standard without council approval. So why did council adopt a standard in the first place? In 2001, the city had been experiencing a series of winter storms, which included severe localized flooding. It was determined through an engineering study that, in general, the cause of the localized flooding was excess runoff from development. Specific areas that were addressed in that study included flooding on Grand Avenue and around Highway 1, the Meadow Creek area in particular. And the chosen solution, based on the adoption of the 2001 standard, was on-site retention. So prior to 2006, which is the new standard that's now applied, the city drainage standard required retention of all water on site. It provided a credit for existing impervious surfaces on redeveloped sites. This is an important point here. It provided a credit. So if there was an existing asphalt parking lot, for example, regardless of the definition of redevelopment, you would receive a credit for that area that was on site as of 2001. And at that point in time, redevelopment meant basically removal of the existing buildings on the site, you know, for additional development purposes. So in 2006, the council adopted an improved drainage standard, presumably to increase the benefits received from the 2001 drainage standard. And in fact, it did. So it removed the credit for existing improvements on redeveloped sites. So now with the 2006 standard, if a property were covered in asphalt and all the buildings were removed so that the project could be redeveloped with a different kind of development or new buildings, there was no longer that credit given. And the result was that it further reduced flooding. So you had more retention on site, less flooding off site. The 2006 city drainage standard applies to all building permits issued since 2006. And so this is important also. It is, again, a building permit issuance standard. It's not a standard that carries with the map. It's not a standard that carries at the time a project receives planning approval. And unfortunately, the Grover Tech Center is not vested. Now, what does that mean? A project can be vested by recording a vesting tentative track map. And a vesting tentative track map allows for development of the project over a period of years, but basically protects the developer against new fees and new regulations, with one caveat, unless those regulations are related to life, health, and safety. A great example would be the recent building code standard change, and that is that the California Building Code required that all new buildings and additions to new buildings be fire sprinklered. Well, that standard didn't exist. In fact, in this case, in 2001, that standard didn't exist when this development received its entitlement and some of its first building permits. But, however, now, with new building permits, if the developer and owner of the property were to build today, that standard would apply. You would have to put fire sprinklers in those buildings. So, essentially, the Grover Tech Center is not vested in that it does not have a vesting tentative map. It is entitled in that they have the right to build and to pull building permits. And also, in that case, again, all standards in place today apply to the application for any new building permits. In the letter that the applicant and developer addressed to council, the applicant indicated the Regional Water Quality Control Board had reviewed the project, and in their interpretation, the Regional Board post-construction requirements did not apply. Now, the letter says that the city's drainage standards do not apply. And unfortunately, that is a point of confusion, and that has occurred quite often. The city has a drainage standard that specifically relates to flooding. It was a standard that was developed to try and mitigate severe flooding that has been identified in the Grand Avenue and Highway 1 area, as well as some other areas in the southern part of the city. That standard was adopted long before the Regional Board required the city to apply for and receive a permit for stormwater compliance. The Regional Board permit is considerably different. It relates to water quality specifically. And in this case, there's a set of standards called post-construction requirements that were adopted late 2013 and early 2014 era. And those post-construction standards can be addressed by retention, and thus the confusion. We have a drainage retention standard. There's a Regional Board water quality standard that can be addressed by retention. They appear to overlap, but they are not one and the same. They're actually two independent standards within the city's development code. So I want to be clear about that. So as far as the Regional Board is concerned, for projects that were entitled, again, they had a planning approval and had the right to pull building permits prior to the adoption of the Regional Board's requirement, if they were entitled, the Regional Board requirement does not apply to them. And that's true. That's been the case. We adopted interim standards. The interim standards did not apply to projects that were entitled, so that's how that applies today. The city's drainage standard has applied since 2006. So following the July 20th City Council meeting, staff met with Mr. Ford to discuss his waiver request. And I think it's important to note that Mr. Ford is requesting a waiver from the city's drainage standard, and staff is recommending against a waiver. In staff's opinion, a waiver can be seen as arbitrary and capricious, and it could open the door to additional waiver requests from other projects either currently entitled or projects that could be entitled in the future. So we met with Mr. Ford to try and assist him in understanding the options available to him as a developer to meet the city's drainage standard. At that meeting, Mr. Ford provided additional justification for his request for a waiver. But even with that information in hand, neither myself nor the community development director could find justification to allow for a waiver of the standard. We did not see where a waiver applied. Staff did provide the results of a brief study that staff conducted and to determine the options available to Mr. Ford. And staff determined that as the project was currently proposed, that landscape areas that were identified in the project could be used to meet the majority of the retention requirement. It would require the development of small retaining walls, and that further reductions in the volume of retention could be achieved through the use of pervious materials in place of concrete and asphalt. Staff looked at that and contemplated the cost differences and savings between a traditional project using concrete and the traditional construction of the planting areas. And staff came up with a cost estimate of between $12,000 and $20,000 per unit, which, based on our interpretation, based on a five-year lease, amounts to an additional lease cost of between 2 and 3 cents per square foot per month, based on a five-year lease. And at the end of the five-year lease, the cost of those improvements would be paid off by a lessee of one of these units. So in staff's opinion, there are three options available to council. Again, staff is not recommending granting a waiver. Staff has identified the options, which include do not amend, make no amendment, but basically apply the standard to the project. Amend the existing drainage standard to exempt projects entitled prior to development of the 2006 standard. So, for example, any project that came in between 2001 and 2006 would no longer be required to meet the city's drainage standard as it applied in 2006, but would, in fact, simply have to comply with the original 2001 standard. Sorry, caught up in my own words there. Or, as a third option, amend the standard to allow partial credit for redeveloped sites. And with that third option, I think staff would be seeking a better definition of redevelopment, not just removal of the buildings, but to what extent. And that's something that, although not necessarily could not necessarily be resolved tonight, staff would provide guidance and assistance to council in coming up with a better definition of redevelopment. As staff's recommendation tonight is option one, which would basically be no amendment to the existing standards and apply the standards developed in 2006 to Mr. Ford's project. With that, I will conclude my report and take any questions that council may have.
Very good. Thank you, Greg. Let's see if there's questions. Barbara, you have any questions?
Not at this time.
Okay. Jeff?
I do have a couple questions, and thank you for the presentation on that, Greg. So in looking at the information that was provided, so I know it's apparent that there's not a map associated with it. So the question I've got is, if I can find them, under the conditions of approval, and I'm going in the wrong direction, so it's, it indicates that the improvements as part of the project included work along Front Street and Newport to build a half section. So did Mr. Ford have to build all of those improvements at the time that he did, or could he have built them in a with just the buildings?
I have to admit I don't know for certain, but assuming that it was treated as a typical project that was intended to be developed in phases, My belief, my assumption would be yes, that he could have developed those along each unit's frontage.
Okay. So, and I guess the reason for that question becomes is all of the improvements, all the public improvements have been constructed as part of, we'll call it the first phase of that. And so the city has actually benefited from those improvements as Mr. Ford has been moving forward with the other aspects of the project. So the second question to that is, and has the city accepted those improvements? This may end up being a question for the city attorney, would those acceptance, whether we've done them formally or not, would that effectively be the trigger of building permit sticks in the air type of situation from a, while it's not a vesting map, it's a use that's been, what's the correct planning term? Effectuated?
No, I think the word is vested based on the substantial investment in public improvements.
Okay.
So that's kind of where, that's what the...
And the answer is no, it would not. The trigger on this is pulling of the building permit. And at the time you pull building permits, the development standards that are in place at that time are applicable to each unit or each area that you pull the building permits for. That is the trigger for measuring compliance with the development standards.
Okay. That's not how I read the conditions of approval, but we'll have that part of the discussion later. So the next question I have is, where was that? Bear with me. Had to do with, you mentioned currently entitled projects between 2001 and 2006. So having asked that question in various forms previously, the answer has always been there's no known projects remaining from that time period except for Mr. Ford's. Is that the case, or do we know for certain that this is the only project remaining?
As I'm aware of, this is the only project that that remains to pull building permits. So that, and back to the correct term, projects that were entitled between 2001 and 2006, all the projects that were entitled in that period have pulled building permits and initiated construction and completed construction, with the exception of Mr. Ford's development.
Okay. Is his the only one that didn't have a map?
No.
Okay. I think that's all I have for the moment.
Okay. Karen, any questions?
He's confused me.
He tends to do that, doesn't he?
I'm going to keep thinking here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Miriam?
My first question is for the city attorney. Is there any case law where vesting could be implied from certain actions?
There are cases that pertain to application of fees, and if there was substantial investment in the project that applied, a vesting interest, but it specifically deals with individual projects. I have not researched the particular application of those doctrines to this instance.
Because I just want to make sure I understand, if back in 2001 just a map had been filed, then this wouldn't be an issue.
That is not correct for various reasons. Even if the map was vested, as city engineer identified, if this is considered, for example, a public health and safety issue, city has the ability to impose additional conditions even on a vested map.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a vested map. It's not a map. So that would not solve the issue. Having a map in 2006 or 2001 would not solve the issue unless the project was vested.
And how would it What steps should have been taken so that this would not be an issue?
If you might, I'll chime in a little bit. So the city attorney is definitely doing a good job as far as the legal requirements. The basic process from a staff level is if you want protection from new fees or new regulations, you file a vesting tentative track map. And that's for projects with four or more units. And a vesting tentative track map, then, if adopted by Planning Commission, ultimately by Council, and recorded, then allows you to develop a project in phases over a period of time. And over that period of time, then, unless a new regulation is adopted for life, health, and safety requirements or standards or reasons, you are basically protected from those new regulations. Now, as I mentioned earlier, one of the new regulations that occurred in the California Building Code, and there's no argument that that applies to this project, is the application of fire sprinklers. Clearly a life, health, and safety issue. Without fire sprinklers, it's been shown that, you know, buildings, even with great response times, there's too much damage to the building and potential damage to neighboring properties. Well, you know, that's possibly part of the question here tonight, and although not presented as such, is that presumably council adopted the 2006 drainage standard, which is an increase in the restrictions of the 2001 drainage standard, to increase the effect of that drainage standard, which is to reduce flooding on Highway 1 and Grand Avenue, flooding that damages buildings, that possibly injure people, could cause cars, you know, to have issues. And you may see some of that flooding in the next coming several weeks.
Right.
Health and safety issue. So there's two issues here at hand. One is it's a new regulation. They have no vesting protection, in my opinion. And two is that it's most likely a health and safety issue.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I would classify this as a life, health, or safety measure as much. A fire alarm is more clear to me, but... And I'm not sure what the intent was when it was passed, but one thing I wanted to ask along those lines of the flooding is now that we've done a bunch of improvements along Grand Avenue, especially the area near Highway 1, do you think that that might alleviate any or some flooding issues?
It will reduce them. Last year, we had a number of storms that I believe would be classified in the neighborhood of a 15-year recurrence interval, which is a relatively small storm. We didn't have any really severe storms, in my opinion. And during those storms, we had rainwater over the back of the sidewalk. But for very short periods of time. This year, we may experience significantly more.
Okay. And I guess, let me see, I just want to understand, I know the mayor says he's a recovering planner, I'm a recovering lawyer, so I want to understand, because I'm kind of hung up on the fact that it just seems to me this vesting could be implied, when I look at attachment 2, a lot of the... this document says things like in general conditions number 3, the plan submitted for a building permit shall be in substantial conformance with the plans approved by the Planning Commission and signed by a qualified person. And then, I don't know, just in going in all these conditions from 7 to 14, it seems like if these were met, to me, that would imply the entire project. And I'm not sure if I'm reading that attachment incorrectly, but similarly, then when I was looking at attachment 6, when I was looking in the general statement and the third paragraph down, each improvement shall be designed so as not to increase the rate of flow in water. And then it says an exception to this may be permitted by the director if there are adequate downstream facilities provided. And so that's why I was asking about the West Grand Avenue improvements, because then it seems like there is already place for an exception. And then exceptions may be allowed, I'm just turning to page 51 now, exceptions to these standards may be allowed by the director when it can be determined that such exceptions are in the best interest of the city. So, for example, can we say, because clearly having this, what was once a blighted piece of property developed and viable is in the best interest of the city, would that language provide for an exception?
In my opinion, and both my opinion and that of the community development director, and we spent a considerable amount of time going through this, what it specifically says is that an exception to that particular standard or requirement could be allowed if, in the opinion of the director, that was in the best interest of the city, or, as you mentioned, the other standard that you mentioned earlier, if there were adequate downstream drainage facilities provided. In reviewing this, both myself and the community development director determined that in both cases we could not reach that finding.
And this is my last kind of I'm trying to understand this technically. Jeff will probably have better questions on this, but if the rain's all coming down there now and it's all open now and it's already flooding, then are we really improving that much by requiring certain kinds of concrete? Because there, with nothing there, there's already an issue. So to me, that's saying maybe we already have a city issue that we have to look at. I don't know.
So the requirement provides open retention volume. And that open retention volume is related to an amount of impervious surface. As proposed, so you have flooding now, as you've identified, and flooding occurs on partially as a result of just the fact that there's land there that water could potentially run off of. However, as the property currently stands, it's the majority of it, 8 of the 10 units are dirt. So when, as you know very well, the sand, when the rain hits the sand, it infiltrates. And up to a certain point, it will continue to infiltrate into the groundwater, at which point the ground becomes saturated, and then it begins to run off. If you, as proposed by the applicant, put asphalt paving and concrete walkways and the rooftop of the building itself over that site, now no water infiltrates. 100% of that water will flow directly to the area impacted by current flooding. So yes, providing impervious surfaces in place of, providing pervious or surfaces that can allow for infiltration in place of surfaces that are impervious and do not allow for infiltration is a substantial benefit. In addition, providing the required retention volume, which is simply an open area of volume for storage of water, is also a significant improvement and will provide additional relief to downstream flooding.
Okay. And those, in reading through the materials, the idea of the plastic underwater basins, that's not going to work because you have to have the area.
That certainly could work.
Oh, it could.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that could be an option, but it was not cost effective.
Again, staff was looking for cost effective options to provide in a discussion with the developer. And so they are expensive. The underground pipe basins or concrete basins require significant excavation and purchase of the structure itself, as well as inlet structures to those. We looked at more cost effective solutions, as you've seen recently employed by the Green Park development, as an example. And those solutions can significantly reduce the amount of retention you have to construct on site by structure. And again, we came up with numbers in the range of 2 to 3 cents per square foot for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
It seems almost insignificant.
Okay, thank you.
So, City Attorney, you have something you want to contribute?
Just to maybe clarify a little bit, and because we're talking about implied vesting, investing. A vested map is what, as the city engineer identified, is a mechanism by which an applicant or a developer can protect and freeze in place. the court's decisions have implied vesting, or what's called a vested right doctrine. And I'm reading from a primer, so I looked it up just to make sure.
Yeah.
The doctrine of vested rights protects property owners from changes in zonings when they have received a valid building permit and have completed substantial construction and made substantial expenditures in reliance on the permit. In other words, if I'm starting to build a mall and I pull the building permit and I'm halfway done with the mall, and then all of a sudden the city decides, well, and it's not a vested map, the city decides we're going to change parking requirements. Now you need 4,000 more parking spaces or whatever. The developer can go and say, I have a building permit, I've made substantial expenditures into the project, I have a vested right in this project, even though I don't have a vested map. That isn't the situation here, in my opinion, and that's why staff, with consultation, reached the conclusion and the recommendations that they're providing.
Thank you. Thank you both for those clarifications. Karen, did you have anything?
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay. I have two questions, then we're going to go to the applicant because I know he can answer some of these, and I'm going to let him answer them. So I'm reading on page 4 of the staff report under option 2, and I'm looking at a very loaded sentence at the very end of this, which says, and this is the one we were talking about, amending the standard for redeveloped sites entitled prior to 2006. This amendment would apply to all residential commercial redevelopment projects approved prior to 2006 with existing retention devices, which could now be removed, resulting in increased runoff as a result. What does that mean? Are you telling me that someone that pulled a permit, constructed a project, is going to come back now and say we want to get rid of it? Is that what you're implying? I want someone clarify.
I don't know that someone would go to that extent.
Okay.
But short of something else being unique about this project as opposed to the other projects that had entitlements between 2001 and 2006 that did build at substantial cost underground retention facilities, if we, for example, waive the requirement, they could realistically request a waiver.
Okay. I don't know if it's realistic, but thank you for that answer. Bob, can you tell me about drainage improvements that have been made at that end of Grand? Because I know in the past when we've talked about flooding on the back of sidewalks, it's more between 5th and 9th. We upgraded storm drains between 4th and Highway 1 and even at Meadow Creek. Can you enlighten us on that?
Well, there was a rather large storm drain. In fact, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's probably one of the largest drainage facilities in the city. It's almost 60 inches, isn't it, in terms of the circumference? And it was placed as part of the project that went from 4th. That's where that it picks up. And it actually flows underneath the storm drain, underneath the UP railroad right-of-way, across Grand, and then enters Meadow Creek about where the bridge is.
Okay. And then are there any plans for upgrading any storm drains between 5th and 9th? Because we get a lot of runoff coming, obviously, down the hill and then heading west toward the ocean.
There have been plans. There are plans actually to improve the drainage all the way up to 12th Street, if I'm not mistaken. We've discussed it in the past. We've actually had it in the CIP at different times. Our problem has just been in finding a way to finance those improvements.
Okay, very good. So circumstances have changed to some degree, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And I have a question of Mr. Ford when he comes up. So what I'm going to do, let me open this up to the public. And is there anyone, Mr. Ford or a representative, would you like to come forward and make any comments? Okay.
Good evening, Mayor Scholes. Is this on? Good evening, Mayor Scholes and members of the council, staff. My name is Murray Wilson. I'm here representing Mr. Ford and the waiver of the drainage standards tonight. A couple of questions that have been asked tonight we have our interpretation of, and for the most part, I think we agree with staff's presentation. There's a couple of issues in there, especially the vested issue that we're at odds with and think you may be able to look to our interpretation to hang your hat on. So to get started, I just want to real quickly recap. Project was approved in 2001 by the Planning Commission, and you can follow along here in your packet if you'd like. It's a 2.2-acre site. When completely built out, will include 10 buildings and about 52,000 square foot of industrial and commercial space. The project at that time in 2001 was not conditioned to provide individual on-site drainage, but it was required to comply with condition of approval number 11, which was previously referenced in discussion, to construct a drainage improvement on the south side of the project site. I'll quickly read to you what that condition says, and we believe this condition is still applicable based upon some vesting issues that we'll expand on here. The applicant shall construct drainage improvements within the 10-foot drainage easement on the south end of the property as designated on the final map for this property to city standards and specifications and to the satisfaction of the city engineer and community development director. To date, 3 building permits have been issued, including a retaining wall that goes all the way down the west side of the property, and these permits have been issued consistent with city standards and specs. I don't want to talk real quickly about vesting. The discussion of vesting comes up a couple times in the staff report. On page 2 of the staff report, there is a discussion of vesting, and it has to do with the tentative map that was filed as part of this. There was a map file that just it did not have the word vesting on the map, which could have answered the question, but that's not where we're at today. But the map was not vested, but all the improvements were made as discussed previously. These include the curb gutter sidewalk, storm drains on the street, and other utility improvements. The other type of vesting that I'd like to discuss has to do with vesting of the coastal development permit that was issued for the project. This project included a resolution associated with a tentative map and a coastal development permit. Your code section 6.30.060 states a permit shall not be deemed exercised until the applicant has substantially commenced the approved development. That's straight from your code. What I'd like to point you to, and there's larger images in the back of your packet of the image that's on that slide, is the image of one of the 3 buildings on the property, which you can see has been constructed along with the retaining wall, which is a crucial part of the buildings themselves as well as a retaining wall for the site development. Real quickly before I go to the next slide, another way to look at that statement, I know there was a question brought up about what does exercise mean. I think Mr. Scholes said it's another term for vested or something to that effect. So another way to read this statement, which comes from your code, is that a permit shall be deemed vested or exercised once the applicant has substantially commenced at the approved site development, which was approved by the Planning Commission. So I went on to look for a definition of substantial site work. Your ordinance doesn't have one, but other ordinances do have one. For example, the County of San Luis Obispo's coastal ordinance has a definition for substantial site work, and it's defined as site work that has progressed beyond grading and completion of structural foundation, and construction is occurring above grade. I'd like to point you to the picture that's on that slide that's also in the back of the package, which is the rest of that wall that goes down where the remaining 7 buildings are proposed to be constructed in the future. So where we're looking here is the question of vesting, and do you have an ability to hang your hat on the vesting of this land use entitlement, the coastal development permit, similar to the way you could with a vesting tentative map? Little bit more with regards to vesting. Staff also concluded on page 1 of the October 19th staff report that the project is entitled. As I mentioned, very similar language in the entitlement or exercise, vested, all similar definitions. The project is entitled based upon the Planning Commission's approval and partial construction of the project. This includes both the buildings, the site improvements associated with the tentative parcel map, and the wall associated with both the retaining wall and the future buildings that will be attached to that wall. So where we're going with this is the vesting of the coastal development permit will allow the completion of the project subject to the conditions that are included in the resolution, as I believe attachment 2 of your package. The project drainage standards should be based upon the standards that are outlined in that resolution, which includes condition of approval number 11, and not the 2006 drainage standards. One thing we'd like to stress is this is not a waiver of the standards. We believe that we're actually exempt from these 2006 standards because the coastal development permit vested this entitlement by conducting substantial site work and getting those walls up in the air. So in conclusion, our position is that the 2006 drainage standards are not applicable since the coastal development permit was vested or entitled. This is not a waiver. Therefore, your council could exempt the Grover Tech Center from the standards, and it would not be arbitrary or capricious. As indicated earlier, there's no other outstanding entitlements from the 2001 to 2006 timeframe. Therefore, only this project would be exempt, and it would not set a precedence for future projects to come in because you could connect it to the vesting of this land use entitlement. Drainage will be addressed by condition of approval number 11, and the project is subject to that condition. And no amendments would be required to the standards if you allow this project to be vested and entitled and therefore being exempt from the standards. So what we're recommending is that your council consider alternative 4. It's actually very similar to alternative 2 that's outlined in there, except it doesn't require that you go back and amend the ordinance that created the 2006 standards, because the standards for drainage will be addressed through the conditions of approval and the items that are listed in resolution number 01-011, which was the approval document. So that's my discussion on vesting. If you have any questions beyond the vesting discussion and the entitlement, Mr. Ford will probably be best to answer those. And I'm available for questions. I believe Mr. Ford is as well.
Okay, I had a question regarding plans to build out the project. Is it going to do the rest of the buildings all at once, or is the intent to phase it? Okay, so let the record show Mr. Ford clarified its phased approach. Okay, anyone else have any questions of Murray?
Actually, I think my question is probably going to be for Mr. Ford as well, but I'll ask it and see who answers. And it maybe it's since we've got a bunch of recovering people up here this evening, it's the recovering engineer in me. The condition 11 states construct drainage improvements within the 10-foot drainage easement on the south end of the property. What are those improvements expected to be? I mean, is it literally a culvert? Is it some other structure? So, I mean, what is intended?
It's been completed. It's a culvert that goes from the south end. Okay. So, Brad, I do need you to come up to the.
Those have been completed. It's an actual culvert, underground culvert that goes from the bottom of Front Street, the south end of Front Street, and goes straight over to the west side of the property.
Okay, so those have already been completed as well. Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else have any questions, Mr. Ford?
I just want to say Mr. Ford and I spoke a little bit this morning, and I asked him this morning, but I'd like him to kind of explain this again because, you know, it says in the report that there is a somewhat, you know, cost-effective way of complying. $12,000 to $20,000. Could you explain why that would be prohibitive or what your issues are there?
I just did the math of 3 cents a foot over 5 years, and that's less than half of what the numbers are if you peak at $20,000 in the cost. And that's the same consensus has been kind of worked towards the numbers the cities have been generating at this point. To do the the concrete that drains through it. It's not just the concrete. You have to cut subgrade way down, put a lot of gravel, a lot of other works involved to do that, and it's substantially more than what the estimated costs are. I've got some estimates on that, so it's probably close in the neighborhood of close to $40,000 to $50,000 to do each individual pad, and there would be seven more of those to do.
Thank you.
Karen, yeah.
Hello. So then, the condition of approval number 11. Do I understand you to say that this? That drainage easement has been completed for the 10 parcels? So you've already done that, what was required at that time for drainage?
Everything's completed, all the sidewalk curbs, gutter, underground, power, electrical, cable, the drainage across the retaining walls. And those retaining walls are significant. They've got the whole foundation for all the west foundation for all the buildings. It's not just the wall. Those are actual part of the building.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. And can someone clarify for me, so was this project subject to an actual map, parcel map, or because I saw the term final map in one of these conditions?
Yes, there was a two-lot parcel map that was part of this project. It was associated with the attorneys on the corner.
Yes. That's right. Okay.
Basically a change of
the
lot line.
Gotcha. Thank you. Okay.
Could I ask one more question while they're up there?
Sure.
Was there a reason that there this map wasn't filed that was stamped vested? Was it just nobody asked you for one, or you didn't?
So
I didn't have a clue about the whole vesting issue at that time. Okay. I've never even heard of it. It was something I probably should have known, but I didn't know at the time that you need to vest.
Okay, so let me weigh in on this vesting issue. Now that I know this was subject to a map, the Subdivision Map Act is very specific with respect to vesting. The whole point of putting vesting on a map is you vest your rights early in the process. We just did this with Green Park. That when someone puts vesting on a map, we require a lot more upfront. In that particular project, we required architectural elevations, engineering, and things that you could typically phase in a subdivision are required up front. So you vest the right early. And now the attorney is right. If there's a public health safety situation, yes, the vesting doesn't protect you. The other way you vest in the Subdivision Act is very specific, is if you invest a substantial amount of money. They probably even go as far as saying, and I'd have to, it's been a while, but I believe it's in excess of probably $150,000 to $200,000 is how you vest the right to get sticks in the air. So the issue of staff is kind of alluding to, well, I'm going to hold that for comments. Let me let Mr. So the issue of vesting is whether you vest up front and make that investment up front or if you invest on the back end. So that's the discussion. If we're the Subdivision Map Act is very specific about vesting. So it's a matter of interpretation, and staff has chosen to interpret it a different way. Okay. We have to decide as a council if we want to interpret it differently. So I think that's what I have.
So towards that end, can you vest a parcel map?
If it is a subdivision and if it is subject to the Subdivision Map Act, which is state, they have very specific sections that talk about the issue of vesting.
Okay. So because in my prior history, I had not heard of a vesting parcel map. So I'd heard of vesting tentative maps, but obviously this does
you
not
can,
have four parcels, so there's no need for a tentative map. There's it's a parcel.
It all. Well, we're getting too technical because it all matters. I mean, so a tract map is five or more. Parcels four, depends on what you're requiring of a parcel. Most cities can't control themselves, so then they make a parcel map subject to all these requirements when, in fact, that goes well beyond state law. But I'm done with my dissertation on planning today. So thank you, Mr. Ford, for the response to the questions. If we have no other questions up here, I think it's time for the council to have some deliberations and and make a decision one way or the other. So thank you.
Just to clear the record, I have no problem with health and safety. Whatever I need to do in those buildings, structural, fire, anything, everything above the ground, I have no issues with complying with on that. And as far as substantial improvement to the drainage with the stuff, with the completion of the improvements at the west end of Grand Avenue, it's very significant. I own the Station Grill. We've had some serious flooding in there. When they put that drainage in, we have had no problem. The only time it goes over the sidewalk is if it actually physically clogs up with debris.
Jake, thank you. Okay.
Can I ask one more question?
We're going to deliberate. Okay.
And the reason I'm going to ask this question may have a slight impact on deliberations. So it's been discussed, for the record, I have had some conversations with Mr. Ford on this, not this particular subject, but in the past. The on-site improvements that you're going to do, so is your intent, whether it's obviously the discussion has been around pervious pavement and so forth, but is your intent to have storm runoff go 100% to the street, or is it your intent to have as much as possible on-site go into the landscape planters so that there is going to be some on-site retention, just perhaps not to the volume that the 2006 ordinance has in place?
It would be exactly with what we have with the existing buildings now. Where there is exposed area, it will saturate to the best of its ability. The balance will be drained off.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, great. So let's have some discussion, or I know we've had a lot of questions. So what's the general thought?
I'll jump in here with regards to the – I know staff has had interpretation and discussions and so forth, and has basically brought it back to us for participation in this discussion. The way I'm reading the past discussion in 2006, Mr. Ray represented or said that there was no specific suggestion that it was health, life, safety discussion in the 2006 ordinance. I can counter that and say there was no specific language in the minutes that says there wasn't discussion to exempt everything before 2006. And so my approach would be to take this project, if this is literally, as staff has represented, the only project remaining with any life, for lack of a better term, to go towards what Murray was saying with regards to it's already met the standards of the conditions, so we don't have to do an exemption, we don't have to do a waiver, it's met the intent, sticks are in the air with the retaining walls in the back of the property, the public improvements are already in place. If we as a city need to accept them, then I think we should move forward and do that with regards to that. But the improvements are there. This is a subsequent phase, but it's already started. So I'm supportive of the recommendation to exempt the Grover Tech Center from the 2006 revised drainage improvements because the coastal development permit has already been I'm not going to use the word vested, but has been exercised through the improvements that are already in place.
I have a question about this being a redeveloped project, redevelopment project. Yes, when the initial building was going on and the initial permits were pulled, it was a seedy, undeveloped area. 14 years later, I can't understand why it is still a redevelopment project and why it should not comply with current standards.
So when you say, you mean current standards as in standards for today?
As far as the drainage goes.
Okay. I think you stumped everyone.
The way I've been thinking about it is just because it's such a unique situation, and because so much was done of these conditions, that I guess even though in my mind it was vested, for as much as I can understand the codes and whatnot. So I guess to me, we're not making an exception where this was already vested. It was just maybe that a map wasn't filed and those conditions weren't met. And I think you bring up a really good point, because I wasn't here 14 years ago, but it seems like what must have taken the area from being a blighted, seedy area to actually an area we walk all the time is the improvements that have been made. Because even though it's vacant, it's nicely kept and there's a nice wall. And so that is, in my mind, redevelopment. 'Cause we walk down there all the time and we don't, it's a nice street and sidewalk, one of the few consistent sidewalks. So I'm just not sure. That's, I guess if we're giving our opinion, I really want to conserve water and I really don't want to cause a flood, but I just see either an exception or not even the need for an exception that this should go forward without the additional expense.
So what's your sense regarding option two?
I would be in favor of option two, and if we're making the exception and we're drafting the exception, couldn't we just clearly state that this only applies to new development and that, you know, it does not affect existing retention or the removal of existing retention, that's not even on the table?
Let me see, City Attorney.
Thank you. Honorable Mayor, Council Members, I think that If there's a various themes that I think I'm seeing, but if overall you're looking to find a best most supportable way of relieving the additional burden from Mr. Ford, I think that finding that combination of completed drainage improvements that are in compliance with the conditions of the project, along with your ability to establish that additional improvements that have taken place in the area, Grant Avenue and stormwater drainage improvements that were put in by the city, have basically met the conditions and have satisfied the need for any additional drainage. And you can bolster that up with the fact that you know, basically by completing the drainage improvements prior to 2006 coming into effect, that, you know, basically they've exempted themselves from the necessity of that. You can treat the drainage improvements as the project that's substantially complied with, separated from the map, and basically under those circumstances, since permits were pulled for that, and again, vested rights, you need a pulled permit. And it certainly has been substantially completed, because it's been fully completed, as I understand it. You could vest the right in the that condition of the project and then basically exempt them from necessity of these improvements. From a legal standpoint, from consistency standpoint, from not setting a precedence, I think that any type of a waiver or exception or any avenue that you pursue in that direction is just not supportable. And that's why we took the position that we did on that particular issue. But I think perhaps what I've outlined can assist you in considering at least or discussing that area.
That's a very good thank you for that. And I think he was kind of talking about a modified version of what you were talking about. So do you want to try and form a motion around that?
I'd be happy to. I'd like to make a motion that we indicate that the project is in compliance with the conditional use permit based upon completion of public improvements, based upon completion of other public improvements taken on by the city or others to address drainage within that in that location, and improvements beyond the public improvements for the construction of the retaining wall, which includes portions of the future buildings. All of those together provide that the Grover Tech Center is
exempt from the additional requirements.
Exempt from additional requirements of the 2006 drainage improvement standards.
Okay. So I want to second. I will second that motion for discussion.
Okay.
I see.
Oh, my question.
Confused looks. Karen?
Okay. When I first went through this, I thought, I just don't think I can see a way to give a waiver here. However, after I asked the question about the drainage improvement, and when he said that the entire drainage improvements had been constructed, then I felt that basically I feel that that portion of what we're talking about right now is done.
Mm-hmm.
So he's already done that part. So I feel that I don't feel that I'm doing a waiver. I feel
right.
that he's done that part, so this is a moot point for me. So
okay.
if that's what you're saying, what you've just said,
no, it's
then I'm good.
That was my intent.
Yes, it is not. The motion, as I understand it, is not a waiver.
Not a waiver.
It's
correct.
An exemption.
It's an exemption.
It's an exemption based on some solid findings.
Based on the findings, he's exempt from the new 2006 requirements. That's all.
And I think Miriam even talked about this is such a unique project that you're not going to find any. I don't think you're going to find another project in the city that meets this or is consistent. That was my understanding.
Okay,
that's why I second.
Effectively, he's exempt because he's already completed the improvements.
Right.
Yeah.
And because there are other conditions which
mitigate the need that gave rise to the 2006 additional requirements.
Well put.
Okay. Yeah. One thing I would just say, because as we're understanding it today, this is only for two more buildings go forward, and there will still be five more hanging out there, is please let's all work together to get filed whatever needs filed.
This is the whole
So this will apply to the whole thing.
Yes.
But as far as the rest of the plans, let's get maybe one of those vested maps so that we are not maybe doing that. You can't.
I think this,
So, okay. So we'll see you soon.
So in effect, the action, if the council majority votes to approve this motion, it is in effect is kind of accomplishing the same thing.
But this will accomplish all the drainage issue.
Yes.
Just that one issue.
That's correct.
Okay.
And we are not making any revisions to the drainage standard.
That's exactly right. That is correct. Okay. Everybody comfortable? Everyone clear on the motion?
Except for the fact that I think we should have Donna read it back to us.
She used to like you.
Can I relieve the clerk of that duty?
Yes, please do.
Thank you. I think as I heard it, the motion was that based on the findings, which include the fact that all of the drainage improvements have been completed by the developer prior to 2006, and that city has completed additional drainage improvements which removed some of the burdens of the drainage in the area where this development is based. The council finds that basically the project is exempted from needing to meet the 2006 drainage and requirements and may move forward with pulling the building permits without those requirements being imposed.
Very good. Is that what the maker of the motion understands?
Yep.
And the second understands that too. So, roll call.
Yes.
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 Thank you. Motion carries. And City Attorney, thank you very much for your support and assistance on that.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have to go back to item number six. That we'd be through that one pretty quickly. Boy, we are doing great. So item number six, and I think that was the award, the construction bid for the 2015 two streets, correct? Mr. Ray.
It is. So for the sake of the public, I'll give you a little background on the project. Voters approved Measure K-14 on November 4th, which authorizes the sale of up to $48 million in bonds for repair of residential streets over the next 25 years. Council approved the first $5 million bond on January 20th, 2015. On June 1, 2015, Council authorized the 2015 street rehabilitation repair project. And since that time, as a result of various circumstances, the project has become divided into three different phases. The 2015-1 project has recently been completed. The 2015-2 project is being contemplated tonight. And a third project, the Phase 3 project, has been developed to address light maintenance needs with the remaining funds from that $5 million bond issuance. The 2015-2 project includes rehabilitation of pavement on following list of streets. That's North 5th Street, a section of North 5th, section of North 7th. I won't, unless Council wants me to, I won't go into the specific sections. I can produce a map, but I believe you have one in your staff report also. So it's North 7th, Saratoga, North 13th, South 16th, and South 13th, and Dover Court. I'll add that all of these streets included are heavy maintenance. There's no light maintenance included in this project. Note that four blocks of Saratoga, to address that particular issue, four blocks of Saratoga between North 12th and North 16th Street are, in fact, light maintenance, so they would be included in the Phase 3 part of the 2015 bond project. And that is currently in design. Bids were opened on December 16th. The city received seven bids, ranging from $1.9 to roughly $2.5 million. The lowest responsive bidder is CalPortland. I believe there's a representative in the audience here tonight. Thank you for waving. Appreciate that. They had from Santa Maria, and they had a bid of $1,950,751.80. The estimated cost, total cost for this phase of the project, is $3,161,000. That includes the construction, additional costs for council-directed improvements on 13th Street, some additional design. Well, includes the design services, roughly $400,000. Construction management estimated at roughly $300,000, and administration on the project. And project management at $110,000, and provides for a contingency of $250,000. Included, again, I'll re-mention the 13th Street improvements. At the time when staff came to council with a discussion about the project, council directed staff to include bike lanes and sidewalks on North 13th Street. That resulting design effort has indicated that there'll be additional costs. However, the project was bid currently to include 13th Street as previously designed. The 13th Street improvements are still in design, and a change order will be issued to the contractor to address council's desires to have the sidewalk and bike lanes included. There were some other minor issues related to that, bulb outs at Grand Avenue and some narrowing there also. I've gone through this pretty quickly, but basically council or your staff has identified the following alternatives for council to consider. They include award the construction contract to the lowest responsive bidder, CalPortland, in the amount of $1,950,751.8, or delay award of the project and provide additional direction to staff, or reject all bids, modify the project, re-advertise for bids as soon as possible. Clearly, staff's recommendation is to adopt the resolution awarding the 2015-2 project to CalPortland Construction, authorize the city manager to sign and affirm change orders in amounts up to $400,000 to fund to
in addition to other things, to fund the 13th Street improvement modifications and other possible change orders. And three, authorize the mayor to execute the contract on behalf of the city. And with that, I will conclude my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Great. Thank you, Greg. Before we do that, can you actually put the map up on the screen?
I believe I can.
Thank you. This is for anyone who might be in the audience or at home watching. Questions? Councilmember Nichols, do you have any questions?
No, I don't.
Okay. Councilmember Shaw?
No questions.
Councilmember Bright?
No, thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Lee?
I have a couple.
You noticed I left you relaxed.
Yep, I appreciate that. So my questions have to do more with, again, the scheduling of work and some other how we proceed through what we're affectionately calling 15-2. So with the award this evening, assuming we move forward with it, whether or not withstanding, when would the outreach to the various affected community residents start with regards to improvements? I mean, what is the schedule to move forward so that we can let the community know when this is going to take place?
Essentially, upon award, assuming award of the project tonight, my direction to the project manager, as you're aware, is John Hollenbeck, would be to immediately begin or initiate that process of outreach to the residents and affected businesses. So that would be occurring over the next, essentially the next month.
Okay. So
can I piggyback on that?
Sure.
Are we going to follow the schedule as listed here, North 5th, North and 7th and Saratoga, et cetera? Is this listed in priority of how we're going to start?
It is not. The order of work is basically up to the contractor to decide, they would base that decision. Essentially, that's how they developed their bid. They've come up with what they feel is the most cost-effective way of proceeding with the project. So we could ask. We have a representative here tonight. We could ask them if they had an intended order already or if they're still developing that. But no, that there's no staff required order of construction.
I think we should do that. He's waited here patiently. Why don't you come up?
I'm Brian with Cal Portland Construction.
Hi, Brian. Welcome. So the Councilmember Nichols asked the question regarding the priority of in what order, if the council gives direction to move forward with Cal Portland, have you looked at the streets and is there any priorities that you've established internally?
So the main, I guess, types of work on this project are kind of broken up into three parts, I guess. The first part, in our eyes, would be all the concrete flat work. So that would be the sidewalks, curb and gutter. And just like the project we just completed for City of Grover Beach, and we're happy to do so, we went through and did all the concrete work first. And so that kind of sets the elevations for everything that you're building up above that, including the road bed. So our plan would be to kind of break the city up into like a north half and a south half. Grand Avenue being the dividing line, and tackle the north half of the job first, and then go to the southern half, doing all the concrete work, and that would take a couple months. There's quite a bit of concrete work, about 500 cubic yards, so substantially more than the last one, and then from there, the next type of work would be the reconstruction, which is substantial. This project calls for cement treating the roads, which you don't see very often. This city has really gone the extra mile, I would say, to make sure that these roads last, because when you go to cement treat, you're in for the long haul. So we take the whole road and basically break it down to its elemental form and then recondition it and add cement to it, shape it to its final grade, and then it sets up basically like concrete. And that's just the base course. And then we put hot asphalt over top of that. So the reconditioning and the cement treating, the plans call for doing the roads half at a time because it is so intrusive. So our plan would be, again, to do half of the north part of the city and then do half of the southern half and then just reverse that and do half of the northern half, the other half of the northern half, and the other half of the southern half. So that process will take a couple months also. And then the final step would be the final cap and paving and striping, of course, and markings. So it's a fairly involved project, and but certainly one that we look forward to, and I think we can get it done.
Great, thank you. Don't go very far. Jeff?
Actually, my other questions, I think, are not for Brian, but thank you for participating.
Well, hold on before you leave that. Because I wanted to ask a question kind of on that in that same line is, I know there are mobilization time frames that are identified, but how quickly do you think, if the weather cooperates, if the council moves forward tonight, could we see some construction? I think that's what the community really wants to know.
Boots on the ground.
Yeah.
Yep. With perfect weather between now and when we started, it would be the week of February 15th.
Okay.
Which was, I guess, would be about a little over a month and a half almost from now. But up until that time, there's a lot of things that are going on behind the scenes. The submittals, change order work, that are important things, notifications, stuff like that, that have timelines. We have to notify people at least a week before we even start work. So, so all that takes time. But we just want to, whenever we start a job, we'd rather make sure that we have all our ducks in a row and then come in and get hard.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, so now you can hear me.
Sounds good. So next question is, the last project had water line improvements and other utility improvements. Is there a reduced amount of utility work on these streets, or what utility work is anticipated?
It's greatly reduced as compared to the last project. Council recalls we made the street selection kind of avoiding some of the streets that required major utility work to try to provide the most straightforward project with this first bond issuance that we could. So the first phase, as you recall, sort of ended up in the project because it was ready to go at the time and clearly was in keeping with the goals of the major K-14. But it had already anticipated some significant waterline improvements. So this is basically a handful of services will be changed out, and some water valves will be added, and a couple of water valves that aren't performing as they should will be replaced.
Okay, appreciate that. So the next question is a confusion on my part, and we kind of broached this at the break. So you're probably anticipating this question. So with 15-2. The initial discussion was that Pebble Court and Encinitas Court, excuse me, Pebble Street and Encinitas Court would be in 15-2, and I know there was some discussion, and as you said, the heavy maintenance versus the light maintenance, I see that it's in 16-1, those two streets, and yet in the light maintenance duty, the streets around Pebble and Encinitas are in the light maintenance category. Is the condition of those two streets such that it couldn't go into the light maintenance, and it needs to stay in 16-1 because it's still heavy maintenance?
Short answer, yes. Maybe a little more explanation. In the development of the Phase 2 project, which was really going to be the the only other phase of this project. Council had indicated some desire to include additional sections of Saratoga and some other portions of streets in the northern part of the city. And as a result, we entered a discussion with council about, okay, well, adding means subtracting in a way. So we want to add some higher priority streets, and we'll have to remove some other streets. So council came up with a list of priorities and then identified what we thought was the appropriate cutoff point based on the funding available. And those streets were moved to 2016, the first bond phase. There was no light maintenance package contemplated at that time. We then went into design, and through the design process, we were able to find some efficiencies and some savings in the construction estimates. And as a result, came up with the fact that we'd have a couple hundred thousand dollars left over, which could cover a significant number of the light maintenance streets. And so staff's recommendation was then to use that money to address those light maintenance needs that are super critical, so that we don't let streets fall off into the heavy maintenance category. And so that's probably confused things a little bit, because the two streets you mentioned weren't light maintenance. So they were still heavy maintenance. So we developed a sort of a third project that never existed, and the heavy maintenance streets continue to be on the 2016-1 project list as prioritized by council.
Okay. And so with those two streets going into 16-1, we have not done design on those streets yet.
That is correct.
Okay. So which then leads to my next question, is the design for 15-3, you said, is ongoing.
It is.
Okay, and then 16-1 is going to come forward in some defined amount of time in order to anticipate the discussion of bond issuance potentially later this year, and hopefully the two of them in, as my wife says, the bubble world, that is me, the two of them fit together, and as soon as the bond monies are available, the construction is done and out to bid and moving forward.
Yes, and that is what staff is committed to, is to having the design completed and ready on the shelf for the time in which funds become available from the next bond.
Okay. So then my last question has to do with my pet changeable message boards. So was there a review of potentially the city purchasing those, or is there a component in this bid that the city maintains those message boards after they're done, so that we can use them on other aspects of the project, or are we still renting them with this phase of the work?
So there's no specific bid item that identifies a cost in this phase of the project relative to the changeable message boards. They are a requirement, and so you will see changeable message boards in place. I almost can't say that. And so then that brings the question, have we done the necessary homework to determine if owning the changeable message boards is cost-effective, if it makes sense? I mean, at the outset, I would agree with the discussion from a while back that it seems to make sense. But we really don't know, because in this particular case, we don't really know the cost of the changeable message boards. It's not a specific bid item. We can determine that based on other cities' bids where they have included that as a bid item in particular. And so the plan is to go through that process and really look at, you know, what are cities typically paying a contractor to include that on the project on a monthly basis, basically on a monthly basis, and then how much would it cost to own and maintain a changeable message board, and, you know, own, maintain, store, and other things, and then what would be the other benefits that could be received as a result of that, perhaps for city events and other things. So we simply haven't entered into that investigation yet, but we will, because I'd like to be able to provide a real solid recommendation to council.
That's something we do with the mid-year budget review. But I think that could potentially work.
Okay.
No more questions? Okay. I think everybody else said they didn't have any questions. So
Is there anyone from the public that would like to address this item before the council? Okay, seeing none, let me bring it back to the council. And I was really trying to be disciplined, and I would ask staff to relook at Encinitas Court and Pebble. And in spirit of full disclosure, I actually live on Encinitas Court, and I'm not sure. I'm going to have to go take a look at the streets next year and see why is that street considered heavy rehabilitation versus light maintenance, and maybe can ask as we go, maybe we can talk about having another look at that, because I understand the time between 15-2 and 16-1, but based on past performance, I would worry about a gap between being between the two. And Saratoga gives me some concern as well. Mm-hmm. But anyway, what do we all want to do on this? So this is basically just to award the contract to Cal Portland, yeah. And that's for just 15-2, not 15-3. That's right. A separate. Discussion, correct? Yeah. So we'll have more talk on that.
And so since this is a recommendation for just 15-2, I'm going to move that we move staff's recommendation and put all the other discussion into the mid-year or the next capital project update.
Okay.
That's
a motion?
There's second. A motion to move staff's recommendation.
There's second. A motion and there's a second. Is there any additional discussion on the motion? Okay. Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay. I think that is our last. I do have. Okay. I'll wait to communication. So we're done on that. And I think council committee reports. Anyone, I think it's the first of the year. Does anyone have anything they want to report? No one's had a meeting, right?
I was welcome
no
back
meeting.
To the EDC.
you had an EDC meeting?
Nope. So I just got an email from Mike saying welcome back.
Oh. Wow. All right. So, Council, who's got Council Communications? Miriam, you have anything?
One thing, this kind of goes along with being on the HSOC committee, but separately down here in South County, we are trying to get a warming center up and running as ASAP. So we need volunteers. I have volunteered to cook one night. If you are in the warming shelter on Sunday
cooking?
Night.
What are you cooking?
Who knows?
We need a reference from your family.
Large amounts of something. Oh, they know I can make large amounts. That's for sure.
How many are they anticipating?
They're, I think around 20 to 30. But, yes, Jeff would know more details because he's handling it from Five Cities Homeless Coalition. But, yeah, that was the only thing I think that I wanted to make sure people know about.
Okay.
And actually, towards that end, just before the meeting, I received an email from Jana Nichols, the executive director of the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, saying a warming center is activating in the Five Cities area, opening tomorrow night, and at least Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week. They are looking for 7 to 10 volunteers per night. And the location is going to be the Department of Social Services Conference Room 128 at 1086 Grand Avenue in Arroyo Grande. There is a warming center information hotline that I can give out, and that's area code 805-710-4430. So that's 710-4330.
Okay.
Yep, 4330. They are working on folks are putting together transportation to and from the warming center from three ride-on locations, one of which would be the Grover Beach train station. The second one would be the Pismo Beach Outlets bus stop, and then the third would be the Arroyo Grande Library. So, unfortunately, the facility cannot accept pets, and smoking is not allowed on site, but it will be open. As of about, guests are asked to not arrive before 5 p.m. So, but there it is. Sobriety is a condition of entry. No drugs, no alcohol are permitted. So, okay.
Mary, you have anything else?
Nope, that's it.
Did you have anything else?
The only other item I had was kind of an update on the Phillips 66 item. It has finally been scheduled for the County Planning Commission. And that is going to be so February 4th and 5th, so Thursday and Friday, up in the County Government Center. And I did receive a notice that there's, an informational meeting tomorrow night at the SLO City County Library at 6:30. Not entirely sure what the if there's going to be new information or what the information is going to be, but there is some level of meeting tomorrow night as well.
Okay. Barbara, do you have anything?
No, I don't have anything.
Karen?
I do.
Okay.
Thank you. First of all, I want to say the streetlights are fabulous that have been replaced. The new lights are just marvelous. It's just amazing. People can see. I can't tell you how many people have commented on how bright the lights are. It's great. So I'm so pleased about that. I have had some comments from my neighbors, though. We love the new street. Brighton looks fabulous. I should have said that while the Cal Portland guy was here. However, as a result of the streets being so great, this people are speeding. And you, I'm sure, know that as well. Yep, I know. So, we, as a matter of fact, one neighbor, her dog was killed. And so they asked me, what is the speed limit? Well, I don't even know what the speed limit is. I'm thinking it's 30 miles an hour. I don't know for sure. Is it 25?
25.
I don't know. Is it? So I start looking around the neighborhood. I don't see any speed limit signs in a residential neighborhood. So I don't know what to do. So this is why I'm bringing this here. What do we do? We're going to have all these new streets, nice new streets without any bumps and holes, and people are going to just be flying through our town. So I think we need to kind of start thinking about how we're going to regulate the speed. Can we put up speed signs? I mean, I drive like an old lady anyway, but particularly on a residential street, because, of pets and children and so on. But so I'm hoping that we can come up with some kind of a solution or some suggestions that I was going to put up my own speed limit sign, but I wasn't sure what would happen.
No, you should. You should put up one to children playing, stop speeding. I think I see that in neighborhoods all the time.
I was going to put up the speed limit, though.
Oh, the speed limit. Okay, so maybe that's something
it's 25. I know it's being exceeded all the time.
So thanks for bringing that up. We should maybe have a conversation about that at a future agenda to discuss what happens when these streets are repaved and they're straight streets with no stops to go. I know we talked about this with North 13th, and I believe we came up with a really good solution. So we do have to figure out the balance. So we can have that discussion.
One of the other topics that we've talked about on that, if I can piggyback on that, was a moratorium on trenching after improvements of the streets.
Right.
So if we can include that in that discussion as well.
Okay,
so
very good.
So that there's no...
Okay. Anything else, Karen?
No, that's it for me. Thank you.
Okay. So I want to ask just a few questions. Did you have anything else?
It actually has more to do with a perhaps an update from you on South County Sanitation District, in the fact that I got a notice in the mail yesterday with regards to the potential rate increase.
I got mine today.
So I was wondering if you had any updates on that, or if
I don't.
I would have to see what that is, because I think it is it's really more regarding going to putting it on the county tax rolls.
That could be.
No, it was about the rate.
It was the rate increase, yeah.
Okay.
The redundancy project.
Yes.
Yeah, and those. So I didn't.
Good to know. I didn't get that.
I'll get yours tomorrow.
Okay. What kind of timing did it give you on that?
And I intended to bring it this evening. I want to say it was February.
Okay.
A public hearing in February.
So, I had mentioned this previously, but we have a meeting Wednesday night. Let me get more details and report back to you all. Let me do that. Sorry. I guess I didn't anticipate them coming out that that early. Anyway, I will get you information on that. Okay?
Okay.
I can't say no decisions have been made, so. Okay. I think Greg's still nearby. So, Bob, I'm curious in the, and I didn't want to ask this because I was trying to get through that, but the timing of the 2016 One streets, I think Jeff kind of alluded to this and maybe even asked, is something that maybe we can get some information, if not tonight, the next meeting. The timing of the bond issue, because I think in the staff report he talked about this next series set of streets would take us up to the near the $5 million.
That's correct.
And then we need to talk about the next issue. And then I think it would be really helpful if we got an update on the status of Oak Park.
All of those will be next meeting is a CIP update and will include information regarding all three of those projects and the CIP update. Relative to the bond issue, we are going to initiate within the next 30 days working with our financial advisor. He is aware that we need to get the process completed in order to make sure that the next sale of bonds is done in time for the assessor's office. And so that will probably be May or June of this year in terms of completion of sale.
Okay. And I want to maybe I'm going to push back a little bit with Oak Park. I'd like to see maybe you can give us an update in a Friday letter. I think we had talked about expectations with respect to the delivery of that project, and being that it's January 4th, I have some concerns as to whether that project is moving forward and whether we're going to be ready, because we've talked about the community expressing a lot of anxieties and concerns with respect to the condition of that street. And I know we had talked about it hopefully not slipping too far in the slipping in the schedule.
I will include that in the Friday letter.
Okay, thank you. Okay. I think we are done with council communications, and I will apologize to my council colleagues on you getting notices and me not having a response or an answer, a suitable answer for you tonight, but I will track that down. City manager, any report or comments?
None tonight.
City attorney?
I'm here.
And while you have the floor, can you cover our closed session items?
Thank you. It's the intent of the council to meet in closed session on two items tonight. First one being existing litigation, Diamond versus City of Grover Beach. Second one being recruitment of the city manager issues.
Okay, very good. And with that, we're going to recess into closed session.